Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, it's another crazy Wednesday. I just spent almost 2 hours talking to folks in Australia on the Australian Bill of Rights that I work with Jen Clark on. And so to cut the Zoom call, dash over here, plug in the microphone, bring up the website for Blog Talk Radio, and immediately come here and start broadcasting. It's kind of a trip. It's really sort of interesting to be able to do that. I was looking for a last-minute phone number for one of my guests. Actually, nope, I found it. I actually do have it. I can't believe it. That's so cool. All right, so that solves another problem. So it's improv radio today. Things are happening so fast at Action Radio, I can't tell you. You know, we had starting just last week with Dr. Brian Curtis, who is one of the foremost warriors in terms of truth for what's going on with COVID. You know, and in a way, we've sort of done our own little bit too, broadcasting things, you know, years before anybody else did. And so that's been fascinating. We had Mama B on Monday. Mama B, who's I think head of the Black Leadership Council for the Republican Party here in Florida, and a bunch of other things. Mama B is just amazing. Mama B is a national treasure, and is going to be pretty much the major part of Monday's shows from now on. And so we've moved Peter Pry over to Tuesdays at 8 o'clock Central Time. And so we're also switching the times over. So we have a lot of our shows are going to start at 7 o'clock now. And it looks like that's going to be better for folks that, as we seem to have more listeners Midwest, Central Time through Pacific Time than we do in the East Coast, because I guess there's just too many liberals there worrying about things that they're not talking about. So that's okay. We'll get there eventually. Anyway, I got to Bill Fecky on the line. He actually has more time because he is on the road. So we're going to keep him wide awake and perky, you know, as we go through and talk to Bill. So he'll have a little bit more time today. And usually it's going to be half an hour for Bill, then half an hour for me, and then Wendy, and then Chansey, and then the last hour. Who knows? Anyway, let's get to Bill.
On tight, Action Radio presents the Fecky Report.
Good morning, Action Radio Land. I am live from Wolcott, Indiana, the booming town that has less citizens, and actually there's more wind turbines than there are citizens.
Oh, that's hysterical. The poor birds. But hopefully little ones. Big turbines kill lots of birds, so we don't want that to happen. So Indiana, bad winters.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, so these are the big turbines. I'm staring out. I'm at a rest area right now because my wife, she has to conduct some business real quickly. So it's just too hard. She gets motion sickness, so we can't be driving while she's on her computer. So we pulled over to the rest area. So
let her drive. Oh, she's on the computer. Oh, that wouldn't work. Yeah, because people that get motion sickness because they're in the back seat, and there's an equilibrium problem between inner ear and because they can't see the road. So when you can see the road, your body is already automatically adjusted to the changes in it. You know, so I guess you can't have her drive and be on the computer at the same time, huh? That'd be
She can't. She can't. So So we pulled over, which is good timing, anyways, because I wanted to call into the show. You know, we're getting close to Chicago, lots of heavy traffic, and I didn't want to be distracted while I was doing that. So, yeah, we're headed up to visit some family in Chicago. Going to watch the Chicago Cubs play tomorrow night.
Yay.
And head up to Wisconsin for a wedding over the weekend. And then coming down on Monday, we're going to do the Noah's Ark encounter in Kentucky, which if you've never been to it, which I have not, I'm really excited about. It's a life-size Noah's Ark. He built it according to the scale that in the Bible. And it's huge. I've had a lot of friends go to it. Everyone raves about how awesome it is. There's a museum, and I just can't wait till Monday. It's going to be a lot of fun.
So they have two of every kind of animal on board?
That is correct. Well, now, obviously, on the Ark itself, they're all plastic, you know, figurines, but there is a zoo, so I don't know how many animals are at that zoo, so I'm really excited to see how many they're how many pairs they're able to get inside the zoo. So,
yeah, I'm curious.
I'm looking.
Well, call us.
Yeah,
call us here just for a few minutes. Just call in. I mean, you know, Mama B will be here. We'll be talking politics, and who knows what guest she's going to bring. She brought three of them the first time. So just you know, I'm sure we can just work it in for a few minutes. You can talk about this because it'd be much more valuable, I think, while you're there. Going, wow. Man, you're not going to believe this. You know, I mean, that'd be fun. I mean, it'd be great to hear about
that. Well, the problem with it is, though, that it doesn't open until 9 o'clock Eastern time, and then I probably won't be able to get there until closer to, like, 11 o'clock.
Well, then I guess we'll have to hear about it next Thursday, next Wednesday, won't we?
Exactly.
Encounters with Bill
Fecky. Couple things I wanted to report on. First of all, Indiana... I thought that we had issues in Florida with construction. The last time I was up here 3 years ago, I-65, mm-hmm. which goes from Louisville, Kentucky, all the way into Chicago, so it goes right through the middle of Indiana from beginning mm-hmm. to end, was
right.
totally under construction, shut down. It is still under construction 3 years later.
Wow.
And then they had I-65, which is the main artery, shut down completely in the heart of Indianapolis, Indiana, which is the capital and the biggest city.
Huh.
Crazy. It's
yeah.
absolutely craziness. You know, and then I see a big sign that says, I think it was George Pence, you know, keep him in office. So obviously, and he looks just like Mike. So it's, so
well,
it's,
Indiana,
it's,
isn't that where
it's,
isn't that where Buttigieg is from? Wasn't he the mayor of Gary, Indiana, or something like that? The town that time forgot and progress forgot and, you know, sanity forgot. Is it Gary, Indiana he was mayor of, or where was he mayor? Or South Bend?
I can't. Buttigieg is South Bend.
Okay.
And then I don't remember where Pence. I would have to say it has to be South, or it has to be Indianapolis, so somewhere bigger.
Mike Pence was a mayor, too?
Ever,
he was governor, I know that.
I don't know if he – well, I know he was governor at one point, but no one just walks in the governorship usually.
Well, Trump walked into the presidency. He wasn't even a dog catcher.
Yeah. Okay, anyways. But speaking of politics, though,
uh-huh.
a friend of the show, Bob White,
uh-huh.
Yeah, with the Republican Liberty Caucus,
yep.
he has announced – that he is running for agriculture commissioner.
Ooh, that's nice.
It's very nice because right now the only one that's running is Wilton Simpson. He is just finished up his term as the Florida Senate president.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously he was a favorite going in with all the money. Mm-hmm. But Bob is going to give him a run for his money because Bob obviously has a great record with the Second Amendment and does not have a great record with the Second Amendment.
Well, he's held up open carry, hasn't he? Isn't Simpson one of the major people responsible for us not having constitutional carry in the state?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. Well, and something for folks that are outside of Florida to know is that the concealed carry permit system is within, for reasons that I do not understand, is within the Department of Agriculture. So if you run the Agriculture Department, you run the concealed carry system as well. And the fact that we have Nikki Freed, Democrat, who did something came up and she rescinded a ton of concealed carry permit holders. And I forgot what the reason was, but I know it wasn't justified. But that's why this is so important. So Bob, if Bob were there, that'd be great. Now, does Bob know anything about agriculture? Of course, does Nikki Freed know anything about agriculture?
Nikki Freed got into the position because she was pushing the marijuana agenda.
Oh, okay. Well, that's agriculture. Oh, Bill's negotiating with his co-pilot. Yeah. Conversation. Okay. Yeah, we're on the air. Okay, it's a live radio show. Okay, Bill, come on back. Bill, we need you. Bill, where'd you go? I wonder if he's in a bad area. I can't hear you. I said, I'm going to mute Bill for just, let me play something here real quickly, and we'll get Bill back, see if we can get him back in about a minute.
Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try, even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com.
And let's check back with Bill, who's somewhere between Indiana and Chicago.
Okay, you there?
Yeah, I just had to put you on hold because okay. It was all scratchy and we couldn't hear a thing. So, yeah.
No, so what happened was, I don't know why, but I got for some reason my phone flipped over from my phone to my car, so you couldn't hear me at all.
Yeah, it sounded like, well, I thought your wife co-pilot came in and you were arguing over who was going to drive and do the computing. No, I'm just teasing you. But, yeah, so I'm glad you guys, we got to figure out, we got you back. So back to Bob White, which is a bird, by the way, but we're
okay.
Talking about a person.
Yeah, so Bob White, as I was, I don't know how much you guys heard me because I was just rambling on, but Nikki Fried actually stopped Plandemic.
That's what
and
it was.
She was using that as an excuse to not issue permits. She was a total abuse of power.
Mm-hmm.
She tried to claim that there was a lack of people, so that's why lack of staff, so that's why everything got delayed. But that wasn't the case at all. She purposely did that.
Yeah, should have been impeached and removed. She should have been kicked out of there for that kind of dereliction.
Exactly.
And abuse of power.
And there was. There was talk, and Bob White was leading the charge. No one in the Florida Senate was leading the charge. It was Bob White leading the charge to get Nikki Fried removed.
Mm-hmm.
But she ran strictly on getting marijuana legalized. That was her thing, and she pushed it through.
Mm-hmm.
She knew nothing about agricultural either. I don't know how much Bob White or Wilton Simpson knows about agriculture. I've never had a conversation with either one of them about it.
Huh.
So, so I really can't say, but someone in that position, yes, they do need to know about it, but that's what you have a staff for, and that's what you have a budget for, is to put the right people in the right positions, and you should just be managing them. And, Bob White has a long history of being a business owner, and I think that he would do a great job as a commissioner.
Yeah, see, I want a farmer. Give me a farmer. Now, there was somebody that ran earlier that was a little corrupt, but at least he had farm experience, the person that ran against Nikki Fried, the Republican, wore a lot of light blue shirts.
Yeah.
Blonde-haired guy, him.
I liked him. I can't remember his name now. I've met him on a couple of different occasions.
I know he had certain problems, but the thing is, you want farmers to run the agriculture department. You want military people, running the military. You want educators running the education department, if you even want an education department. But the point is, it's like the airlines. The airlines used to be run by pilots. Back when Frank Borman ran Eastern, and I've forgotten who ran TWA, was another pilot. They were actual. I think Eddie Rickenbacker. They were actual pilots, so they knew what to do with the airlines. Well, then when they became run by bean counters, the airlines went broke. In the same way, government agencies, there should be some – we may want to look into this too, is that especially for Florida, people that run for certain departments have to have some basic qualifications. Florida needs more agriculture. We're losing farmland. We're losing – I'm going to look into perpetual easements and perpetual zoning so that land, at least at the county level, that land once is farmland stays farmland. And all these housing developments that want to come in and, buy up and screw around with our farmland, or the Bill Gates people or the globalists or anybody else, farmland is part of our national security. We need to preserve farmland. We need to have permanent easements and permanent zoning so that these guys don't come in and tear up all our farmland. There's plenty of places for people to live in the country. They don't all have to live here. Yeah, go ahead, Bill. And then we got
Bianchi. Okay, so the problem that you're running into in this day and age, especially this year specifically, is that the farmers are so busy, producing. And then really all of small farmers are really getting pushed out to big corporate. So do you want corporate farmers controlling a state position?
I would definitely structure taxes and so that structure government where it can be structured, not to penalize, but to reward. Family farms under a certain, or family individually owned farms, I'd have them tax-free. Corporate farms, I'd probably tax them. You've got to do something to preserve the individual farm. And you also have to get rid of the inheritance tax so there's no penalty, passing on farms to the next generation. So you've got to preserve farms, family farms, small farms, independent farms. Archer Daniels Midland, maybe they should be broken up on antitrust grounds. The ethanol subsidy people.
Well, but having someone like Bob White in the agricultural position would actually kind of escort the next wave, I would say, because he would have certain things that he would be able to do to help the individual farmer over a corporate farmer.
Yeah.
And I think that would be able to set a precedent just from his liberty view standpoint. Whether he knows anything, like I said, I don't know if he knows anything about agriculture or not. You could learn.
You should also promote it. When's the last time you saw an ad for Florida orange juice? I used to see them all the time. We don't see those anymore. Put out by the state of Florida. Buy Florida orange juice. Wouldn't that come from the Department of Agriculture? I mean, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, that part there, I couldn't tell you. I don't know anything about the Agriculture Department either. So Matt Caldwell was the guy's name, by the way, that ran last time against Nikki Freeman.
Okay.
Just
cowboy hat.
Popped in my head.
Yeah. That's not who I'm thinking of, though. It's somebody different. He was the cowboy hat guy. Do you want to continue this? We got Pianki in the Putnam, I think that's what his name was. Let's get Pianki in here and see if
Putnam
he wants to talk agriculture.
Putnam was the commissioner for 8 years, three
terms.
No,
somebody else.
Like
then. I think of somebody else.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, Pianki, you want to jump in here?
Yeah. Good morning.
Morning.
To you and your guests. I heard you make mention about this individual by the name of Mickey. They canceled the gun licenses during the pandemic or something like that.
Yep.
Well, let me ask you a question. Why haven't there not been a move to get rid of this person?
Well, we just talked about
that.
Why
do we let him stay around?
Yeah. Bill?
Yeah,
so,
why don't you let him stay around? Greg, let me ask you a question. Greg, you're a pilot. Just 1 minute. You're a pilot, Greg. If you're flying a commuter airplane, and for 100 feet you flip that bad boy over where you're flying upside down, then when word gets back to the company, how long do you think they will let you stay around?
you'd be fired before you landed, if that were the case. Yeah.
Absolutely. I don't understand, and I really tell this, I'm not getting excited, but conservatives, you got to do what you have to do. You can't be giving these people a second and third chance, because what they would do is modify their answer, and they'll do it again and be more effective at it next time.
Well, let's ask Bill, what's the recall procedure? I mean, Bob White was for getting rid of Nikki Freed. I think a lot of us were for it. Everybody in the Second Amendment community, Florida Carry, I'm sure they were for it as well. But is there a recall procedure, or does it have to come from the legislature by impeachment? I mean, how do you get rid of these bureaucrats?
So right now, there is a move to create a recall procedure for Florida. It's not official as of yet. I know that a couple of bills were presented to the committee.
Yeah, we helped them write them. We helped write them on actual
correct.
Radio, so I know.
Correct. They didn't make it through. So everyone knew Nikki Freed was going to run for governor. And she was going to be out of that position. Mm-hmm. So instead of spending the taxpayer money and going through a year and a half process, whatever it is, and then setting a precedent of kicking people out, I think that they were kind of protecting their own, more or less, so that they didn't have to kick one of their own out somewhere down the road and just let everything play out. You got a Florida legislator that is not really great, has a horrible history on the Second Amendment. So a lot of them probably didn't care one way or another, because a lot of them, especially the South Florida Republicans, a lot of them are in purple districts, so they're kind of afraid to make a stand on it one way or another. you know, maybe losing a couple Democrat yeah. support. And so you got, you know, so they just let it run its course, and now Nikki Fried's going to be out, and now they could do what person they wanted.
Well, you know, what? Here's the problem with that procedure. It kind of reminds me of a police officer entering information in his own personnel file. He's never going to enter in anything that's bad. The people have to demand that, not leave it up to the legislative body, because what they're doing, they're setting the rules and regulations to get rid of their own self when they act inappropriately. So mm-hmm. people have to put those things in place. Like when Greg is writing the law, people have to demand this protection.
Well, as you know, people really just don't care long enough. You know, that's why Twitter is so popular, because you can read it within 6 or 7 seconds, and you get, you know, and you're done. If you can't catch someone's attention within 6 seconds in any advertisement or anything in life, you've lost them for good. That's just the way society is today. And so when you're talking about a recall process, you're talking something that's going to take time and effort to do, and people today are just too lazy to do those movements as a whole. Not everybody.
I hear that all the time.
But as a whole.
I hear that all the time. But is that how you taught your children? Because children grow up to become who? People. If your children are educated the correct way instead of with all this garbage and nonsense, they will behave and they would act accordingly when they reach that point in their life. They know not to depend on information from Twitter, but to go out and do their own research and due diligence. You see what happens when you become lax on one end and how it affects you on the other?
Oh, no, I agree with you 100%. And you're talking to someone who's been campaigning. I mean, I finally took 2 years off, but I've been campaigning for myself or other candidates for six straight years. So you're talking to someone who has been very active in the community the last 6 years, and I finally took a year and a half break, and now I got to get started all up again. But you know, you're talking to someone who does care, and you're talking to someone right now who has been very active in the community trying to get things accomplished. But I'm talking about the majority, and that's the problem. And you could. It's no different than generational welfare, which I really don't want to go down that path today, but there's a lot of parallels between generational welfare and voters. Because the voters have that same mentality as generational welfare, is that, we don't make a difference. We're always going to be in this path. We're never going to change. And that's how voters think. And that's how a lot of the generational welfare thinks. And that's why we keep going down the same path. No one's willing to, you know, no one with influence is really wants to make a stand one way or another because they're afraid to get swayed. I mean, Dr. Oz is a great example of someone who both sides of the aisle, you know, loved him, but all of a sudden he decides to run for a Republican Senate, and now all of a sudden all the Democrats hate him. Same with Donald Trump. He was loved on both sides of the aisle for a long time. Then he put the R next to his name, and all of a sudden everybody is ready to kill him. That's just where we're at today. And it sucks. And it's, you know, I just finished watching a Bible story on Amazon Prime about the story of Jeremiah. And basically, you know, the story of Jeremiah is that, you know, we're going to have to break it all down in order to rebuild it, you know, tear it down to rebuild it. And I don't think we'll have to tear down America to rebuild it, but I'm starting to see Generation X or Generation Z, I mean, really starting to make some headways in turning our country around. They're becoming a lot more frugal. They understand money. I think over the course of time, we will see America start turning back around to the right way. Because I see them being a lot more involved and a lot more doing their due diligence than, unfortunately,
you know,
my generation, the Gen X.
Well, I agree with you. Turning around, one creative area is their education. The way it is now has to be scrapped. because look what it's producing. You're actually producing children that comes out and fight you and go against what is long established. I mean, they're against the Second Amendment. They want to be identified as a she one morning and a he the next. That's because you gave control of your children to somebody who had these nefarious ideas and ideologies. You got to turn it around. You got to get rid of them. Clean house. Bring out Mr. Clinton. You know, you made mention about the advertising of Florida and its oranges. I remember that. But I wouldn't be surprised if an advertisement came about oranges from China rather than Florida, paid by Florida's Department of Agriculture. I wouldn't be surprised nowadays.
Don't give them ideas.
Well, so.
Yeah, go ahead.
Bill?
And four
Florida oranges.
Oh, we're losing Bill. And Bill. There's Bill. Ground control to Major Tom. I'm going to need line just for a little bit here. And then I'll just take it out just for a bit. Yeah, that's crazy. But, you know, one of the things that we need here, Pianchi, is the legislature to recall bureaucrats. And they're very reluctant to do that. Recalls take too long. That's the biggest problem I have with recalls. Recalls of the school board, recalls of all the other recalls, they just take too long. And so it's much better that the legislature recognizes that somebody shouldn't be there. To have a Democrat, you know, screwing around with a concealed carry system and with a Republican legislature is absurd. That Democrat should be out of there.
Well,
the question comes, that was an elected position, though, so that might be a little different because it was an elected position. So that might throw a monkey wrench into the whole thing.
You can set the rules for recall of school board members within a month.
Yeah.
Just put the machines in place. So that's,
no, I agree.
There's nothing that can be done.
Okay, you're back now, Bill.
Yeah. For some reason, my phone just wants to connect to my car every so often, and I'm outside my car right now.
Do they have a thing we should know about? Is there an electronic, you know, bonding process going on here that we need to know about?
So,
a little online dating.
Bianchi said.
Bianchi
said about the he/she thing. I do want to bring up this next topic that I sent you earlier this week is the left. Okay, I'm going to kind of double up on what I'm about to say but the left has completely lost their mind again. And this time they are going overboard on this Roe versus Wade reversal. And they are trying to strike fear into anyone who is willing to listen. And they've come up with these five crazy ideas on stuff that will get reversed after Roe versus Wade.
Oh,
and
I can't
wait.
And
it's the most ludicrous stuff.
But that's on purpose.
So the first thing that they want to do is that they this is coming strictly from the left. No one, not one Republican, has ever said anything about any of these things. This is strictly coming from left talking points to try to scare Democrats for the election, for the upcoming midterms. Republicans are going to ban the IVT to artificial insemination. They're going to ban that.
Oh, in vitro?
Yeah.
In vitro for IVF?
In vitro. Yep, okay. They're going to ban that. That's what the left is saying is going to happen. We're going to ban in vitro. The right is going. You know, Republicans are going to ban contraceptives.
Well, that happened with Mitt Romney and Stephanopoulos. That's a long time Democrat talking point.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
What are the three things? I got a response to this, but what else?
Okay,
what
so that's
three?
Two. Biggest one, though, because I just forgot the other two, but the biggest one, and this is the
stupidest one
out of because this is the stupidest one out of all of them.
Okay,
and
I'll go with that.
After you hear this, you got to think about the military and think about all this, everything that's gone on in this country. Is Republicans want to ban interracial marriages.
That's funny.
You know, somehow they had to throw, you know, they had to get the attention of the black people because that's what the Democrats do, is try to scare black people every single time. And so
There's a lot of black Republicans now that are laughing at this.
Well,
this is why this is so funny.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Pianki.
The Republicans shouldn't have had nothing to do with it, but nor should the Supreme Court legalize interracial marriage, nor same-sex marriage. That's up to the state.
Yes, I'm not a federalist.
Correct.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting you said that. Why? I'm just out of curiosity. Why is this an important point for you, Pianki? Is it just the principle of it? Because I'm just curious. Because you mentioned it a few times. And it's not something I really think of because it happened long ago that where interracial marriages were banned. But I don't remember the Supreme Court case that changed it. But I think states, you know, how many places?
Virginia versus Loving.
Okay, and when was it? Versus Loving? Oh, that's an interesting coincidence.
Yeah, Virginia versus Loving was the case.
Okay, do you remember when it was?
Well, I was a kid, and I wouldn't have been thinking about getting married at that time.
Well, I know what you were thinking about. I think it was the same thing all us guys were thinking about at those young ages when we discovered there were different things to think
about than Tonka toys.
Yeah.
the thing, though, is that it's just not about black and white marriages. How many Republican military are married to Asians, Spanish? You know, I'm married to a Filipino. So now all of a sudden I have to get divorced because I'm married to a Filipino because as a Republican, I don't believe in interracial marriages. This is the most stupidest thing that they could possibly ever say. But you know what?
No,
there's
going
to be idiots out there who are going to believe it.
That's why they say it. No,
but
you
know,
hit the nail on the head.
It does happen.
Go ahead, Bianca, then I want to make a comment.
You've had some cases of mercy killings here in this country. In St. Louis, I know of two, where a Mid-Easterner killed his daughter because she was dating outside of her ethnic group. So it does happen. It does happen.
Pianki, I think they call those honor killings.
It happens with the Muslim
religion. And that's they call them honor killings, and it's a completely different, it's a complete bastardization of the word honor. There's no honor in it. What they're trying to do is retain the family honor, and this is why they say that, by killing one of their women members, you know, for doing something that the men didn't like. There's no honor in that. So it's a completely misnamed thing.
No.
But that's definitely, that's a practice of Islam. That's not a practice of
Islam. So let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the likelihood of me walking down the matrimony line aisle with a Rothschild daughter on my arm? Think. It ain't going to happen.
Well, it's not going to happen with me either, you know, because I don't have the money to be a Rothschild. Yeah, I mean, so, you know, it's not a racial thing, Pianki. That's an economic thing. You know, we didn't go to Phillips Exeter Academy. We're not part of the elite of this country. We didn't go to Harvard or Yale. So anybody of the Rothschild family is going to marry someone that went to Oxford and Yale, went to Yale for their undergrad, Oxford for their graduate work, and probably studied, you know, somewhere else, probably studied on a mountaintop with a Tibetan monk for a while as well, just to be rounded, to get well-rounded.
Okay,
here's the point I want to
hear what you're saying. And Joshua, I got one more last card. Let me throw this card on the table.
No, we got two more minutes with Bill. Bill's going to be around for a few minutes.
I know. Hang on real quick. This is real interesting. I know of a black family whose son married a white woman, and they disowned him. This is within decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it does go on in that type of field. It goes on.
Sure.
On
any family can be racist.
Out.
Yeah. But here's what's interesting.
It goes on today. I mean, it does happen today, but it's so minimal today in comparison to, say, 30, 40 years ago. And in fact, about 30 years ago, even the 1990s, it was still kind of frowned upon. 2000, it was a little bit more accepted. But even 30 years ago in the 19, which is scary to think 30 years ago is 1990s, but,
I was married in the
1990s. Now your son can marry another male. Which one would you rather have had?
There it is. That's the other one that I forgot about.
Oh,
that's the other one that they're going to say that they're going to ban same marriage. That was the other one that they're trying to scare. So
and
they're
how
trying
exactly
to
is this going to be accomplished? Do they say how? Because Roe v. Wade has nothing to do with it. In fact, the Supreme Court are the ones that created marriage rights for both interracial and gay when they had no business doing either one, because marriage is a state delegation of power. But here's the point that I wanted to make earlier, that the reason they say that is because it works. It works on, there's a certain percentage of the population that believes this nonsense, just enough to do it. But the other problem is that the Republican response is always, we're not for getting rid of contraception. We're not for getting rid of interracial marriage. They actually end up reinforcing the very thing they say they're against. So what the Republicans need to do is to get smart and start responding, you know, differently. Use Sun Tzu, use deception. So when the left says that Republicans are going to get rid of gay marriage, you know, then what the GOP has to do, the geldings have to do is come up with something equally ridiculous to say about the Democrats. You know, something totally absurd.
Well,
the Democrats want
to
get rid of the Supreme Court. Democrats want to get rid of the Bill of Rights. The Democrats want to take all your tax money. The Democrats want to give your house to an illegal alien. That's what will happen if we get rid of Roe v. Wade or if we don't get rid of Roe v. Wade. You know, I mean, let's make it as absurd as they are. Just start spouting all these things that are totally absurd that you can think the Democrats are going to do. Democrats, well, we could actually be practical and say, look, the Democrats are going to steal the midterm elections. We need to concentrate on that first. Stop bothering with this other nonsense. That's the really important issue. You know, Democrats want
to
take
the
children
and
put them, yeah, the Democrats, you know, this is.
And let me say this. It's not what the officials in government is going to do. They don't want the family to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want the family to talk about who their father would prefer his grandchild to look like. And that is totally wrong. Parents, families should be able to have those conversations without government telling them or any other association telling them it's wrong.
Well, yeah, if a black family decides they want to keep a black tradition in their family, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, some people might call it racist, but that's a family choice. Just as a white family says, you know, we really want to keep our family white. What's wrong with that? An Asian family could say the same thing, Hispanic family. Now, here's what's going to get really interesting now, and I'll get to Bill in just a second. What's going to happen when the interracial kids start interracially marrying? You know, you're going to have a real blending. You're going to have such a blending in this country in a few generations that race may not even matter, which will be really interesting to see. You know,
why is it getting closer and closer?
Let's talk, Bill first.
So,
Bill, go ahead. Hold on, Bianchi. Bill?
Yeah, so if you look at the latest census, the biggest talking point last year when the census first came out was the fact that white people, there wasn't as many white people as there was in years past censuses.
Is that immigration
it had to do with the fact that white people are not racist and they were having relationships with other races.
Oh,
and so
and those other races were having relations with white people, so that works both ways, yeah.
Well,
yeah, so therefore there's less white people because they got mixed in. The white babies got mixed in as a mixed race. So whenever you have a mixed race, there's a couple different boxes you could check. You know, you could check white, you could check black or white, Asian. You know, you could check multiple boxes. And because the government is so racist, because they are racist, they're the ones who are – yeah, so they're the ones say, oh, white and black, we're going to pick black. Oh, white and Asian, we're going to pick Asian.
Oh, so you can't be white and be a mixed race. That's fascinating. I had no idea. All right, let's get to Bianchi.
That's why the white population is down, not because any other reason. That's the reason why.
Oh, it's statistical lie then. Okay, well, that's interesting. All right, but I don't care. I lived in San Francisco. The white population was incredibly down. In fact, the white population was about 25%, as was the black population and the Hispanic population, and the Asian population. You know, they're pretty much, they're all just a little bit under 25%. And then, of course, you've got like 2 or 3% everything else. But for the most part, San Francisco is pretty equally distributed amongst white, black, Hispanic, and Asian, which is quite fascinating. So everybody's a minority. Bianchi.
Yeah. But, you know, why is it that in the recipe for racism, why come the main ingredient always starts off with somebody white?
Well, because that's
have
the group
that
the
wait a minute.
That's the group
that
wants
that conversation.
To go ahead. Okay.
Have that conversation with somebody black. Ask them what they think about their son or daughter marrying somebody outside of their ethnic group, and you'll be surprised and shocked at the answer if they really tell it to you like it is and how they feel. They always blame the poor white. You know. You get blamed for so much stuff, Joshua. I'm starting to get jealous.
Who's Joshua? You mean Joshua's coming in the third in the 9 o'clock hour? We're talking to Bill here, but that's okay. You can call him Joshua.
He calls me Joshua.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bill.
Bianchi, read the program. This is why I publish a show schedule every day.
So Greg,
just read the schedule. It's Bill, then the Hump Day Report, which is probably going to be Bill, and then Wendy, and then Chansey, and then Joshua Whitehouse, my special guest.
Greg, you know, but Piaki brought up a great point, and this.
Yeah.
So I've actually asked before, and if you if you saw a black man and a white woman who are married, and you asked a white guy and a black woman what they felt about that, most likely the white guy will say, yeah, I don't care. The black woman will be pissed off. And they're the ones who hate interracial more than anyone else in this world.
Why is that?
I'm on the phone.
Yeah, he's on the phone.
I got a homeless guy here talking to me.
Put him on the phone. Put him on the radio. No, seriously. Put him on the radio.
No.
Put the homeless guy
on the radio.
Yeah, why not?
So that is what's happening right now is that, sir, I'm on the radio right now, okay?
Yeah, I just wanted to give you a
wall. Okay, I'll talk to you in a little bit.
Do you want to do your windows? What?
I'm actually out here in a little gazebo area, and he's pretending like he's out of money. But he's got this $200 headset.
What Bill said is absolutely right. See, the black male will be scorned by other blacks for marrying that white woman. They going to say, well, you love, now you got what you call a trophy on your arm.
Yeah.
Yep.
See, now, you remember back during the time of Jack Johnson, how he would taunt the white crowd because he had white girlfriends back in during his time. So now what they say is that when a black male marry a white woman, then he's accused of having that trophy on his arm. And of course, female gets
most
pissed
of the
off.
NFL. What about the NFL players? I mean, there's more
in the NBA.
In the NBA too, with white wives. You know, is that a trophy? You know, this crazy.
Yeah,
so, I think I cut you off,
Donkey. That's the acclamation. That's the designation that the society has put on.
That's funny.
I heard one radio host said that they was getting ready to introduce the wife of an NBA or NFL player, and he said he held his breath. Why would you hold your breath? Because you was hoping that it would be a black female that he married rather than a white.
Yep.
This is so funny. Well, I mean, you know, like Bill's in an interracial marriage, you know, and it's fascinating. But I'm curious, though. Well, let's go through a few relationships. Let's see who would object. So black man, white woman, who objects? Black folks, white folks, who would object? Black man, white woman.
Well, I would say black women and a small portion of white men.
Okay. For different reasons? How about availability? Is that the reason? Is it because if a black man marries a white woman, then black women think there are enough black guys to marry? Is that what's behind it, or is it an actual prejudice?
Prejudice, jealousy. I think it's more jealousy than anything else. You
know,
the stigma of the blonde woman.
Oh, so like Ingrid Bergman and I don't know, Harry Belafonte kind of thing that bothers people.
Back then, it bothered everybody.
Well, that's true. Yeah, they weren't together. I just made up that couple. But all right, let's take the other one. So let's go white. White guy, black woman. Who would object to that? White woman. Black guys. It seems like the opposite.
Honestly, I don't think
the opposite
would.
Sex, opposite race seems to be objecting for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, and when it's a white guy and a black woman.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear. I mean, first of all, you don't see it as often, but you don't hear about anyone making comments about it.
Why not?
Oh, yes, they do. Yes, they do. There's a magazine. There's a magazine that has an article that was written by a black woman. She says, "My white husband used racial slurs during sex." Don't you guys know this? Bill,
What kind of racial slurs do you use during sex? After oh God, what are they saying?
Google those words, racial slurs, black woman, white husband, racial slurs during sex. Google it.
You know, I think I read that article, and all I kept thinking, first of all, I if it's the same article I'm thinking it is, I read it maybe about 6 months ago, and my first thought is, okay, then why are you with this guy? And
yeah.
Second of all, are you? I think I felt like she. The whole article, when the article I read, it just sounded like she was screaming for attention. It was like, "Hey, look at me! You know, I'm being victimized by my husband," type of deal. And it really wasn't about racial slurs as much as it almost felt like it was a fake article. Is the article I read? And I don't know if it's the same one you're talking about, Bianchi, or not.
No, it's not fake. It's true. You know what the terminology is that helps you don't leave him? A BMW is a black man working. A WMW is a white man working. That's the terminology.
Oh, so it's the economic thing. You
I'm
going to
get
come
me a
the
BMW.
Bank account.
What did that mean? What did the slang mean in that part of society when they say, girl, I'm going to get me a BMW? Well, she's going to get him a black man working. Well, with a white person, it's just a white man working. So that exists.
Well, it's interesting that
and
you said working. And why would hold on a second. Why would someone go after – why would a woman go after a guy because he's working? Is she dating his bank account, his car, his prestige? You know, this is one of those great stereotypes that I don't – you know, I would hate to go out with someone because they thought I was – you know, let's say I get fabulously wealthy at this. Am I going to meet a lot more women? In fact, I think I talked to Shelby about this when we're talking relationships on the show.
Well, when you're choosing from a pool that has a high unemployment rate, what do you expect?
Yeah. I was going to say the same thing. Why do you want to look for someone who you're going to have to take care of? You know, when I look for a woman, I'm looking for someone who does work. I'm not looking for someone who wants to be a housewife.
Mm-hmm. But
you know,
I don't think guys have the same requirement. I mean, it's a point of interest, and guys will note it. But I think women actually really go out and try and find the guy that's going to bring them the most, you know, income. So for whatever reason, you know, it seems that you want to talk about stereotype. It just seems that women are more comfortable spending men's money than men are spending women's money, except for those deadbeat guys out there. And you know, go get a job and earn your own money, you bum. You know, but I think there's a difference. I think it's more acceptable for women. You know, how many trophy husbands are out there? Probably not
when
a lot.
You see when black males at the college level, extremely good football players like Ezekiel Elliott, when they go to a college, the coach picks the white girls onto the black athletes.
Why?
For two reasons: the possibility. And also that the white girls use contraceptives and won't get pregnant and throw the man off his focus in games. Now you
black
think
college
that
girls
that's
don't
not,
use. Wait. Is there a difference in black women in college don't use contraceptives and white women do?
See, one thing I bring to your show, Greg, is experience. Take advantage of it.
No, I'm asking a question. I'm curious.
Okay, so my question is though.
Now, wait a minute.
That,
I want to find out.
This goes along with the question. Don't you think, though, Bianchi, that maybe it's just the fact that, and for whatever reason, there's just more white cheerleaders, and they're more interacting with those players, so therefore the attraction occurs a little bit more with black athletes and white cheerleaders because they get to know each other and realize it's just skin is just it's just a color. Is just a color and it's not a personality, and so therefore but then the cheerleaders are afraid to lose their scholarship, so they're going to definitely use the contraceptives.
That may be one reason too, but there may be others.
Okay,
well,
what are
sure
the others
is.
Come on, just be blunt. Bianchi, be blunt, tell us what's the difference in contraceptive use between
white
woman and black
woman? Athlete Strahan, he married the white woman after a period of time.
Yeah, Michael Strahan.
She sued him for divorce.
He's on Good Morning America now.
Yeah, I mean, it's the possibility of future checks.
Well,
so the black college women want to get pregnant with the football players so they can whatever, I don't know. And the white women
don't?
They got
their paycheck, Well, I mean, women have always throughout history have always given used sex as a tool, and they use baby as a way to trap men. They've always used.
Well, of course.
getting pregnant is the way to trap men.
Yep. That's why birth control is more important for men.
And honestly, Michael Jordan, he got trapped with Juanita, did the same exact thing to him, got him pregnant, and it was very public in the paper. It went away right away, but his rookie year, she came right out and said, either you marry me or you're going to pay me half your income the rest of your life.
Well, either way, you'd have to pay her half his income.
Yeah.
Well, the same thing with Michael Strahan, not only his present income.
Yeah.
Michael Strahan, not only his present income, but she got a judgment on his future income.
Well, you know, there's an interesting point of law here that we might want to consider, because, you know, with abortion, women have a choice to be parents or not. They also have a choice over the life and death of the baby, as we've talked about, but they also have a choice, and we haven't talked about this enough, over the life of the father. And so if a woman purposely gets pregnant, you know, to trap Michael Jordan because he has a huge income, then that should be listed as fraud. She should have no rights whatsoever. She shouldn't even have parental rights if that's the case. And I don't know if this is done in law or not, but it should be. That if a woman purposely gets pregnant, and we hear this with I remember watching a special on rock musicians, famous rock musicians, and they're women that will throw themselves at guys, you know, in rock bands specifically to get pregnant so that they can get, you know, the millions or a share of the millions that these guys are making. So but that should be listed as a fraud. If someone gets pregnant under fraudulent conditions, in other words, I don't know how you prove it. I don't even know how this is. I don't even know if it's done in law or not. I'm just exploring an idea here. But to me, it seems fraud. If a woman gets pregnant specifically to get a share of money from a celebrity, this is why celebrities have to be careful. This is why they have agents, you know, who I hope are watching out for them. But, and this goes for women too. Famous women celebrities. Some guy wants
to. So how do you prove that?
You know, that's the question. But should it be listed as a fraud? You know, could this be an area of law to explore, that if someone either gets pregnant or gets somebody else pregnant, you know, for the purpose of extracting large amounts of money from them, would that not be considered a fraud and therefore would negate the settlement?
Fraud, but trying to prove that would be next to impossible, and then it turns into –
not necessarily.
You know, and then if you're the guy and you have to go to the jury, and if you don't have the right jury, man, you could really get screwed even worse than if you just went ahead and – you know, just paid
because there's prejudice against men. Men get women pregnant rather than men and women getting pregnant together. Okay.
Correct.
So your choices are consensual or non-consensual. If it's consensual, it's an equal act. It's an equal splitting of DNA. It's an equal act. No one, you know, this is part of the prejudice against men. You know, what was that? I saw something just the other day. It was fascinating that if women have the choice over abortion because it's in their interest, the men have the choice of child support if it's in their interest. So men should be able to reject child support. Say, look, it's not in my interest. I choose not to be a father. I'm not going to pay child support. You know, this is your kid. You lied about birth control or did something or entrapped in one way or another. Said, I'm not going to do this. So we may not be able to prove the fraud, but we may want to have, under the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause, the equal protection of men to waive parental rights, you know, even if they, quote, got a woman pregnant, you know, which is a complete misnomer anyway. And it's fascinating that women are quick to charge guys with 18 years of child support and also as quick to abort a child that a man would want. It's really quite fascinating how the control thing works.
Correct.
So how do you equalize?
Yeah, I read that
how do you
article.
Equalize
I thought,
the?
I thought that was a great article.
Which one?
Yeah, the one you were talking about. I read that. It was a poll article. I thought it was really fascinating. The whole the poll that did come out for that. But Greg, I do need to hit the road.
Oh, okay.
I do need to hit the road though. So I'm not earning my dollar for today, but I am going to go ahead and hit the road and go into the Republican-friendly city of Chicago.
Can you make
and,
a gang warfare
will,
report? Could you report to us from the major gang areas and, you know, preferably if you can, you know, capture bullets in flight, you know, on video for us? I mean, I just, you know, if you really want to do your bit for Action Radio, Bill, there's a service.
Yeah,
you
that ain't happening.
We'll have a moment of silence for you, Bill.
I will talk to you guys next week. All right. Have a good week.
Take care. All right. Let me play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece now, because if we don't get it in now, we got Wendy joining us at 8 o'clock, and then Chansey, and then my guest, Joshua Whitehouse. We're going to talk Pentagon and defense issues and the Trump purge of the Obama Pentagon, which should be interesting. So back in a little bit.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Anti-Federalist 11 was written under the pen name Agrippa, who was a Roman general under Emperor Augustus. Interesting choice. It is thought that Agrippa was James Winthrop from Cambridge, Massachusetts. This paper is actually an accumulation of excerpts from letters. So let me simply point out the highlights and develop a theme. The title under which this paper is recorded is Unrestricted Power Over Commerce Should Not Be Given the National Government. So let's focus on that primarily and leave out the other fluff that always accompanies these papers. Agrippa says, "It has been proved by indisputable evidence that power is not the grand principle of union among the parts of a very extensive empire. The common conclusion from this reasoning is an exceedingly unfair one, that we must then separate and form distinct confederacies. This would be true if there was no principle to substitute in the room of power. Fortunately, there is one. This is commerce. All the states have local advantages and in a considerable degree separate interests. They are, therefore, in a situation to supply each other's wants." If you read only the Federalist Papers, you will get one set of facts designed to lead you to only one conclusion, that without the Constitution, the country will fall into factions which will destroy the Union. However, when you read the Anti-Federalist Papers, all kinds of new information, evidence, arguments, and possibilities show up, which proves once again there are always other options. Agrippa then says, "The complaints of the deficiency of the congressional powers are confined to two articles. They are not able to raise a revenue by taxation, and they have not a complete regulation of the intercourse between us and foreigners. For each of these complaints, there is some foundation, but not enough to justify the clamor which has been raised." Whenever you hear intercourse, think commerce and trade, and it will all make sense. Agrippa is saying these are problems, but not enough problem to abandon the Articles of Confederation. Regarding the giving of power over all commerce to Congress and protecting the states, Agrippa says, "Three restrictions appear to me to be essentially necessary to preserve that equality of rights to the states, which it is the object of the state governments to secure to each citizen. First, it ought not to be in the power of Congress, either by treaty or otherwise, to alienate part of any state without the consent of the legislature. Second, they ought not to be able, by treaty or other law, to give any legal preference to one part above another. Third, they ought to be restrained from creating any monopolies." Agrippa counters the argument that the federal government has to standardize all commerce under the Commerce Clause by stating that having the states retain some authority over interstate commerce wouldn't be much of a problem. He says, "The new Constitution not only prohibits vessels bound from one state to another from paying any duties, but even from entering and clearing. The only use of such a regulation is to keep each state in complete ignorance of its own resources. It certainly is no hardship to enter and clear at the custom house, and the expense is too small to be an object." Agrippa then says of the Constitution giving the feds all power over commerce, "The unlimited right to regulate trade includes the right of granting exclusive charters. There ought then to have been inserted a restraining clause which might prevent the Congress from making any such grant, because they can consequently defeat the trade of the outports and are also injurious to the general commerce. by enhancing prices and destroying that rivalship, which is the great stimulus to industry. Agrippa knew well the value of competition. In the concluding paragraph, Agrippa sums up his objections to taking all commerce power from the states and between the states. There cannot be a doubt that, while the trade of this continent remains free, the activity of our countrymen will secure their full share. The credit of our merchants is, therefore, fully established in foreign countries. This is a sufficient proof that when business is unshackled, it will find out that channel which is most friendly to its course. We ought, therefore, to be exceedingly cautious about diverting or restraining it. Experience has shown that, instead of trying to lessen an evil by altering the present course of things, that every endeavor should have been applied to facilitate the course of law, and thus to encourage a mutual confidence among the citizens, which increases the resources of them all and renders easy the payment of debts. By this means, one does not grow rich at the expense of another, but all are benefited. And then Agrippa, in the last part, adds his analysis of human nature into the mix to again frame the argument against the Constitution. He says, "It is vain to tell us that we ought to overlook local interests. It is only by protecting local concerns that the interest of the whole is preserved. No man, when he enters into society, does it from a view to promote the good of others, but he does it for his own good. All men, having the same view, are bound equally to promote the welfare of the whole. To recur, then, to such a principle as that local interests must be disregarded is requiring of one man to do more than another, and is subverting the foundation of a free government." In that last sentence, it's quite clear that not only giving Congress the power over all commerce subverts the independence and sovereign rights of the states, but the entire Constitution does, which is the main argument of all the anti-federalist papers against rushing into a completely new form of centralized federal government. Their choice is amending the Articles of Confederation to keep the independence of the states while giving the federal government a better range of defined powers for the good of all the people. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Here we go. Do you really want the truth? Do you have questions you can't ask in church? Welcome to the Oh My God Report. Wendy Arthur is more concerned with truth than propaganda, putting more value in scripture than religion, and more about you and your relationship with God than your membership in any church. This is Christianity with a Kick. All right, welcome back, Wendy.
Good morning.
How you doing?
How you doing this morning? I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm wide awake and perky. I was up at 3:30 for a Zoom call in Australia talking about the Bill of Individual Rights. So I've had my tea a long time ago. I'm ready for lunch. I don't know about you guys.
There you go. It's been that kind of a day, I think.
Wednesdays are turning into that. Well, here's the ironic thing, though, was that I discovered that, I kind of like doing the shows at 7, and a lot of other folks like doing it, too, so we can come in a little bit later and stick around till 10. So the new time for our shows, Monday through Wednesday already, are 7 to 10 Central, so 8 to 11 Eastern. That makes 5 to 8 o'clock Pacific time.
So we're, you know, some accidents, you know, promote good ideas. And since most of the show is kind of like a rolling accident anyway, we just take advantage of our accidents and make them policy.
A rolling accident. I like it.
Pretty much. So what's your calamity? Besides having the most infectious laugh on the face of the earth, Wendy. See, she does this to me every time.
Well,
I can't carry on a serious show. I can't. We almost have to put on our serious face whenever we get you on because, okay, we're going to talk seriously now. Okay, we're back to laughing. Thank you. Okay, fine.
It's Christianity with a kick.
That's right.
It's Christianity with a kick. I always get the kick. I never get no blessings.
Oh, well, okay, but that's your department.
You get the kick and no blessings. Uh-oh, we got to talk about that.
We do.
Because religion is the one who will kick you in the teeth about everything.
That's for sure.
And that, because it's not from God, you know, that it has a form of godliness but denies the power thereof, as Scripture says. So, you know, because Scripture also says that, you know, when God gives you a blessing, there's no sorrow with it. So that's how you know the difference. If you're getting a blessing and there's no sorrow attached to it, then it's from the Lord. If they say it's a blessing, but there's all these kinds of attached to it and chains, that's not of God.
Give me an example. I'm curious. Because I'm not a big church going person. I choose not to have a middleman. I just talk directly to God, which is so much more easier from my point of view. So what do they do? What are these conditional blessings that churches are giving out?
Well, it's not necessarily churches, because religion is everywhere. It's not just inside the four walls. It's outside, because it tries. It's the counterfeit that Satan offers to God and being part of a real church body.
Okay.
because there's freedom in anything God does. You know, that, and if he says, okay, go up to here, but don't go any further, he's not saying you can't. He's saying you have free will to choose whatever you want to. If you want to go past that boundary, you can, but I'm not outside of that boundary. You know, as in, he's everywhere, but my protection is not outside of that boundary. Because if I have a boundary set, it's for your protection. Just like when I let my kids play in the yard when they were small, there was a fence. Because we lived on a busy road by a school.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to let them go outside that fence and play in the street.
You
know, it was for their protection. So when God says that, you know, when the blessings of the Lord, when he blesses you, he adds no sorrow to it. He's just letting you know that is a way to know whether it's from him or not. Because Satan will counterfeit everything God has made, because he can't create. He's a created being. So he cannot create. Only God can create. And he made us in his image. Therefore, we can create children. We can create, you know, things with our imaginations that he's given us and things like that. Satan cannot create. He can only copy. So it's always a counterfeit. And he'll try to make it look like God is in it, but it's not. Because in the end, if you go to Proverbs, it also, you know, you have to go to Scripture for everything, man, because that's where all the wisdom is and that's where all the guidance is. Because he says that there's a way that seems right to a man, but in the end, there is death. So that's what Satan offers you. It'll look right at the beginning, but it's going to end up bad.
Yeah.
So when God gives you a blessing, they're just blessing.
Yeah. I was just going to say that for those of us that are ADHD and can't read more than a verse without having our minds get distracted, is there a highlights, like a Cliff Notes Bible? Is there like, this is the good stuff kind of Bible? You know, without the queefles and their asses and all the other stuff. I want just the good stuff, all right? Or give me the movie, Bible the movie, which is all the great quotes. Just put them all in one place so I'll have them handy. I can read my Bible. Just get the good stuff and I'll be fine. But, you know, like I say, I've tried reading the Bible and I either fall asleep, get distracted, or go somewhere else. And the really good things in there, I'll see them occasionally and say, well, that's really great. But it's hidden in such stuff. It's like Federalist Papers. When I studied them, you know, there's only about maybe 30% of it that's brilliant. The rest of it is just fluff because I guess they were bored and didn't have television, so they had to just keep writing. But, yeah, so you know what I'm talking about, Wendy. What do I do?
It's called a topical Bible. That's what you need, is a topical Bible.
Okay.
So if there's a,
why is she laughing
there,
at
there's
me?
There's a topic that you want to look up, that you're dealing with at the moment. It'll give you all the scriptures regarding that topic.
Is it online?
Well, I'm sure you can find them just about anywhere. And you would probably really enjoy the Passion Translation. It's
okay.
Not a topical Bible, but you can look up, you know, certain topics within there's Bible apps like Blue Letter Bible or BibleGateway.com. They both have really good Bible apps you can put on your phone, and it has a search feature in there. You can put in whatever topic that you're looking, whether you're looking about forgiveness or, you know, commandments or adultery or, you know, whatever.
A Bible
yeah,
index.
See? And,
that's
and
what
it,
I need.
Yeah,
I'll never find these things on
all
my
the
own.
Verses.
Okay.
Yeah, with those words in it.
Okay, it's perfect. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, like
I had a totally different
right at your fingertip.
Exactly. That's what I need. Here's a question for you to take up on another show, but it just hit me now, so I want to mention it. We always hear about the separation of church and state, but nobody ever talks about the separation of God and state. And so that's almost two different things, isn't it? Completely different, because
yeah,
when you talk about the church and you talk about God, we should take that up one day. I think it'd be an interesting topic. That what they really want to do is separate
that's
God
actually,
from you. Go ahead.
That's a fabulous topic, because there's a whole lot of churches where God is not going to show up.
Okay.
You know, that he's not there. It's all about them. They're making it a production. It's a show. It's entertainment. It's what they term seeker-friendly, which means don't offend anybody. So don't talk about anything that could offend anybody at any point, anywhere. So why are you there?
Exactly.
Because you're not going to be real. You know, they basically turn churches into coffee shops, you know, with lobbies and sanctuaries. So I'm not kidding. I mean, you will walk into churches these days, and right there in these great big foyers are little coffee bars, you know, where you can order your latte so you can go, you know, get your Sunday morning sip of Joe. But it's not you aren't getting the meat of the word. A lot of them will throw out some milk of the word, but not the meat of the word. And, you know, it says, when I was a child, I thought as a child and I spoke as a child. But as I became a man, or as I became mature, then I started thinking maturely and acting maturely. So you're never going to get to a point of spiritual maturity if you're just, you know I came for my weekly dose of encouragement, and I'm off to do whatever I want to do the rest of the week.
Yeah, it's like mafia people going to church and going, oh, it's okay, you know, and they'll go back to business as usual, you know, hit men during the week.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way, folks.
Exactly right.
Oh, I went to church. Okay, yeah. Well, I'm killing 3 people this week. All right, fine, no problem. I'll get my absolution.
Yeah,
and go
how many
to
Hail Marys do I have to say to cover that? Yeah, you know.
Exactly.
Well, it's true, because you want the word wants. I mean, the world wants us separated from God, period. They don't even want to acknowledge God, because it makes them God. That makes the government God.
Mm-hmm.
And because they will rule your life, and they will tell you what's right and wrong. And obviously that's not going to work. God is not just inside a church building. God is God. He rules heaven and earth, period. And he's very long-suffering. And he will wait a long time and give you chance after chance after chance to repent and to turn to him and to live right and to do right by people, because he loves them. He created them. He wants them treated right. And if you don't, if you continually reject that and reject him and treat people badly, it's not going to end well. Because, you know, as we talked about last week, you know, he says, I will not always strive with man. He's not going to continue to have you fight against him and treat his people and his creations badly. And because there comes a point where he says, okay, you've made your final decision then. And so therefore I've made mine. So he says, today's the day of salvation. That means today, just make it today. What are you waiting for? It's nothing but good for you. So why are you waiting?
That's a great
question.
As long
as you're drawing a breath, you've got a chance.
Yeah, and I think people want their own God, and I think that government especially wants to be worshipped as God. as a god themselves.
Exactly.
And so they want that separation. And I wonder if they talk about the, because I think this came from the left primarily, the idea of a separation of church and state, because they really want to advance the state. They don't care about the churches. But the idea that I was
exactly.
just thinking about is, yeah, and as you were talking about, I said, what about a separation of God and state? That's really what's going on. That's really what they're doing, what they're not saying. And so they're disguising it in churches, but they really want, because they want to be the creator. They want to be the one dispensing rights, as opposed to having them be natural rights. It's the government that has the power, that wants to act in your interest and call it the public interest, that wants control of everything. I mean, COVID is like the worst example of that. And we're just talking about that with Australia. Freedom works, you know, God works, you know, rights work, and government power, you know, corrupts everything.
Exactly.
Anyway, what do you want to talk about this morning?
You know, the old thing. Well, but what you were saying is very true, because when it says absolute power corrupts absolutely,
mm-hmm.
and there is, and that, but that's what the government is after, you know, a tyrannical government. There are good governments, and God set government up, but it was, mm-hmm. it was to benefit the people. It was to be good for the people, and that's not how our current regime is set up. Nor some of those in the past. And I think a lot is fixing to be exposed about just how far back this goes. It's not just recent. It's not just in the last few administrations. It, mm-hmm. it goes way back. And, you know, when you start connecting the dots in light of some of that information that's fixing to come out, we're going to have our jaws dropping and going, I don't believe it, but believe it.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff is fixing to come out. And it's that whole Saul Alinsky thing, you know, that, you know, who wrote the book that everybody's been following on the far left.
Rules for Radicals.
Yeah.
That 1984. 1984 is not supposed to be a manual, folks. It was a warning. Well, I got a thought for you, too.
It was a warning.
We talk about absolute power. Well, this being the Oh My God report, the absolute power is God. And so governments wanting absolute power reminds me of that it's not money is the root of all evil. It's the love of money is the root of all evil.
Yes.
So in the same way is the root of all corruption, the love of absolute power, even when it cannot be obtained by government, because the only absolute power would be God. But it's the love of absolute power that so totally corrupts government. And that they're never going to get there, and they're willing to kill millions of people in the process, they'll never have their absolute power, because they can never be absolute power. And yet they're so corrupted, so destroyed in their soul that, and like I say, look at COVID, look at the dictatorships that went on there, that the love of absolute power, knowing that it can't exist except through God or except by God, you know, is quite a fascinating concept. And yet they were willing to kill, they're willing to kill millions. Look at our country. We lost a million people to, we didn't lose a million people to COVID. We lost a million people to government policy.
Thank you.
Government
that's
pandemic.
Perfectly put.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay.
Because that's what they are after. But, you know, it was the same thing in Scripture. You know, Satan was not satisfied with being the angel in heaven. I mean, the top dog in heaven as far as the angels.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted all the worship that God was getting. He wanted the power God had, you know, because whatever God said got done. And, you know, so he was not satisfied with, you know, being the most beautiful thing ever created. You know, he wanted all the adoration that God was getting. And you can't ever get that. That belongs to God only.
Yeah, the love of absolute power. I'm gonna think about that. I think we're onto something here.
Well, because with power comes money, comes all this, the wealth and the opulence and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's a package deal. You can't want absolute power without wanting all the perks that go with it.
So there's no really such thing as a benevolent dictator then, someone that wants power to make people free. I mean, I would do it, but I don't want power that much, you know? So it's kind of an interesting thing, except
you
do good works with it. I don't want power over.
Yeah, well,
I want power to empower, if that makes sense.
Yes, thank you. Because that's the difference. There's power. You can want power so that mm-hmm. you can do good with it and to benefit the people. That's how the government was originally set up, to benefit the people. But then you have those who are unscrupulous and evil come in, and they want power because they want to rule over the people. They it's basically do as I say. It's a power trip that they just really get off on. You know, do as I say. They have to do whatever I want, period, end of story. I am God. And that's not the way it is. God isn't even like that. God doesn't force us to do things. He gives us a choice. He gives us the good stuff. He gives, and then there's the bad stuff. He says, now, I want you to have all the good stuff, but it's your choice. I'm not going to force you. And that's where power comes in, and they show themselves. It's they don't give you choices. They take away your choices and say, this is what you get, period, in the story, because I say so.
You know, I've never liked the expression the rule of law, because law by itself is law. You know, we use laws, we live by laws, we prosecute people that violate laws, but the rule of law seems to me more of a absolute power thing once again. I don't want the rule of law. And I'm wondering if there's anything in Scripture that talks about the law versus the rule of law.
Well, there is, because the leaders, I think it's more of a term, a semantic thing, you know, because you don't like the term rule.
Yeah, exactly. But, when
you
know,
but, you know, but governments do rule by law. Courts are ruled by law. Schools are anything that companies are ruled by policies. Policies is another term for a law, right? So you have to have policies to have things run uniformly and correctly, and, you know, checks and balances and all that kind of stuff. And that's part of our government. The way our government was set up was checks and balances.
Yeah, I don't mind rules and I don't mind laws, but I think there's a difference of thinking of government ruling through laws. I think that's the distinction. I mean, it may not be a big distinction. Bianca, you may want to help.
Rules of the road, don't you?
But yeah, I'm not saying rules are bad. I like rules and I like laws. Without them, we'd have anarchy. I'm not questioning that. But it's the idea of being ruled by laws, or people using laws to rule, as opposed to implementing the necessary laws to protect, you know, property rights and, you know, and people. That's where I think I'm drawing a distinction. It may not be a worth making. I don't know. Just
if you make a left turn without giving a turn signal, you have broken the law.
Okay, but I'm not saying about laws. But you know, I mean, I obey laws, but I'm not ruled by law, by government using the rule, you know, over me like a monarch would.
Monarchs
rule. It's maybe not a distinction necessarily worth making. It just I got to think about this more. It's one of those terms that bothers me. I'm just curious if there was a scriptural reference to the difference as opposed to who's ruling whom.
You want me to give you a rule I learned when I was a kid?
What's that?
I pour my raisin bran in the dish, empty the box, the last little bit of raisin bran. Then I go to pour the milk, and the milk is sour. Rule it. Check the milk before you empty the cornflake box.
Well, thank you for that breakfast wisdom this morning. On that note, so do your churches with the cafes have a breakfast font where we can put our raisin bran?
Well, you know, I guess if somebody makes that suggestion often enough, they'll implement it.
we digress.
She's very, very smart, and she's full of humor.
Well, Wendy's not a guest. Wendy's a regular reporter. Wendy's a close personal friend. Wendy's been around pretty much since the beginning of Blog Talk Radio. I don't think you were ever around during my WEBY days. At least I don't think so. But I know you've been around for most of Blog Talk. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, but she left us for a while, and now she's back. And so I'm grateful, very grateful. So what do you want to talk about this morning?
Well, I'm grateful, too. I think this is a potpourri day, so we'll just, you know, throw it all in there. Just put it all in.
Listen to the previous hour. Listen to the previous hour with Bill Fecky. You want to talk about a potpourri hour? We're all over the place this morning, and I don't care. This is fun.
It's just one of those days. But, you know, I'm excited about what's coming. Now, I will say that there's going to be some really, really, really dark stuff coming down the pipe. I'm sorry, my dog is playing with a squeaky toy.
We're used to it. We just incorporate the bird noises, the dog noises. You know, when the spouse says, "Dear, breakfast is ready," it's Raisin Bran. You know, we just bring it right into the show. We just keep rolling right along. Did you check the milk? Yes, I did. Okay, fine.
Yeah. Like Big Bang Theory, she also says, "Did you get it? Did you get this? Did you that? Get that?" But unless you have, if you're a fan of the show, you'll understand that. But if not, okay. But what I'm saying is, I'm excited about what's coming for those who are, you know, pursuing righteousness and pursuing, you know, the Lord and wanting to live as He asks us to live, because it's for our benefit, for the benefit of everyone. But those who are refusing and hardening their hearts and stiffening their necks, as Scripture says, it's not going to go well shortly, because there's going to be retribution coming. You know, that God's fixing to clean house on a lot of things, because it talks about bowls in heaven, that when the bowls are filled with the prayers of the people and the requests and the demands of the people about all the unrighteousness that they see, that it vexes their soul, there comes a point when the Lord says, okay, we have to deal with this because this has gone on too far for too long, and repentance has not happened. So we have to deal with this now. And it's, many, many bowls are being tipped over because they're full in heaven at the moment, and we're going to see some really hard things coming down the pike, because God is angry and wanting to destroy, you know, the world, yeah, which is, you're going to hear that preach, oh, God's judgment and this and that. Well, He is judging, but He's not judging the righteous. He's doing this to clear out all the evil to benefit the righteous. It's just not going to look good at the moment. So don't
get
concerned.
It doesn't look
good now.
We've got a stolen government. Country's going to hell, but and I don't mean that euphemistically. But the point is that everything that could go wrong is going wrong. That we have a government purposely trying to screw everything up as much as possible. But my question for you would be, why now? You know, if Genghis Khan didn't create an evil that had to be dealt with, if Adolf Hitler didn't create an evil, or Napoleon conquering most of Europe didn't create an evil that had to be dealt with, if World War One, where generals were ordering troops on both sides to run into, you know, barbed wire and machine gun fire and die literally by the millions for nothing, for inches of ground that went back and forth. If that evil didn't do it, if the Holocaust and Hitler didn't do it, if the millions that were killed in China and Russia, you know, by Stalin and Mao didn't do it, why now? What's happening now that's more evil or a different kind of evil that is existing that would cause God to create a judgment at this time and not at those times?
It goes back to the culmination, what I was just talking about, the bowls in heaven. We look at those as separate incidents, and God does not.
Okay.
Because it's all born of the same father, which is the enemy, Satan, or just one after another after another. Everything accumulates in heaven. Okay, there is no such thing as just this one thing. Everybody has a book for their life. Everybody, and every thought, every action, every anything regarding you is written in this book. That's the book that will be opened when you stand before the Lord. And that's where that personal judgment comes from. So, you know, and it's all related, and anything that ever affected anybody else, anything you ever did or said that affected anybody else is also in that book.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that, because
on you.
Yeah, because a while back I tried to, you know, correct some of the things from my misspent youth. One of the things that was fascinating about Facebook was that I was able to connect people with, you know, that I hadn't heard from, that I never thought I'd hear from again, you know, from 30 years back. And I had, as we all know, a crazy childhood, and made a lot of, you know, mistakes and did things I didn't know were wrong at the time, just because, you know, my frame of reference was so different than, you know, what a normal you know, childhood would bring you. But I've gone back to a lot of those people and said, look, I'm sorry. You know, I was a total jerk. I didn't know I was being a total jerk. I didn't know how or why I was being a total jerk, but I was. So for the things that I've screwed up, I've tried to, as much as possible, find people that I was able to run across through Facebook and say, hey, you know, and it actually is really relieving a lot of stuff. So I can't do it with everybody because I still haven't been in touch with, and there are people I'm sure I've forgotten and things like that. But I think just the effort's worth it.
Cure that in the heavenly.
Say that again?
Yeah, you can still take care of that in the heavenly, though, because
okay.
God is so amazing that, you know, you can't get in touch with some of these people, but you know, that you behaved in a way that probably wasn't stellar at the time, but you didn't know better, like you said. So you can go to the Lord and you can say, Lord, I'm asking you to forgive me on behalf of these people because I wronged them and I didn't know better. So I'm really sorry. And I would really like to make it up and ask them to forgive me. But because I can't find them, I'm asking you for that forgiveness from them. And to make a way, and if there's somebody who's really, really, that I caused, then, find a way to let them find me or let me find them somehow, but I really want that to be forgiven. And he does that. So that's not on your account anymore. That's the beautiful thing about forgiveness forgiveness is not for the other person. Forgiveness is for you because it clears the account on the books. It's a beautiful, freeing thing.
Makes sense. We're going to get to – no, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. We're going to get to Chancey in a couple of minutes, but I want to see if Chancey wants to talk to you before we get to her stuff. We're just a couple of minutes behind this morning. Chancey, do you have any questions or comments for Wendy?
I don't. I'm good, but I love coming on after her. So, yeah, it sounds like y'all had a deep conversation.
We've had everything.
Good morning, Chancey.
We've had comedy. We've had deep. We've been serious. We've been totally off the wall. It's been fascinating.
I love it.
Well, I bless y'all today. Y'all have a great one. And Pianki, thank you for joining in. And I'm sorry about your cereal, man.
Thank you.
Hey, Wendy, do you want to give your contact information for any of your ministries or any of the things that you're doing? I want to make sure we get those in.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we have dimensionsministries.org, and you can go see what we do and just some of the stuff that we do. We can't post it all, but, you can see some of the things that we got going on right now. And if you want to be a part, and just contact me through there, and we'll get it going. Or you can contact me on our Facebook page. At Wendy Arthur or Art by Wendy Arthur or Dimensions Ministries.
This is where I'd play your art theme just to piss you off. I made a theme for Wendy so obnoxious, so terrible, that just the thought of it sends her into dread that I might actually do it. Bye, Wendy. Let's get to Chancey. What is health? What does it take to stay healthy? We have a longer lifespan than 100 years ago, but is the quality of life any better? 100 years ago, their food was better. They got more exercise. They weren't as fat. They didn't have preservatives, antidepressants, sugar in everything, and they didn't have vaccines. If you talk about alternative healthcare, people think of crystals, incense, strange candles, crystal balls, Ouija boards, notions, potions, lotions, and total hippies telling you to detox, man. So let's change our system of sick care into wellness. Let's get healthy. Let's lower our stress, stop taking in poisons, eat and drink organic, clean food, and let's have a chat with Chancey Terry, because this is Wine, Weed, and Wellness Wednesday. You know, if you ever switch days, I'm going to have to change that theme. He's the only one that actually has a day in the theme. I mean, I can move everybody else around, but not you.
Hello, you're good.
Okay,
hey, good morning.
Welcome
How's
to our
going?
Wednesday craziness.
Hi, Chancey.
Yeah, Bianca's on the line, too.
Hi.
Yeah. So how do we get well this week? What's on your mind? What have you discovered? What revelations have crossed your path? What?
Yes. What I wanted to talk about today is a organ that they discovered 4 years ago per the article, but it's probably been researched longer than that. But it's what answers a lot of questions about massage therapy. So I know we talk about massage a lot, but not as much as because I'm a massage therapist. So it comes up regularly. But what we're dealing with when we're massaging the body is that we are pushing your lymphatic system around throughout your entire body. So we're pushing lymph, we're pushing blood. You have to think of like if you had jelly in a sock, and he squished it around, it would come out of the sock. So that's probably not a good
well, no, what's lymph? What is our lymph system? What does it do?
Yeah, that wasn't on the books, but lymph is just basically the fluid that flows throughout your body that uses the fluid that your body uses to detox and to move things through your body. So we have lymph nodes. We have it's a fluid in the body. So the lymphatic system runs throughout the entire body, which is connected to the immune system, like all of human function. So if you don't have, people get lymphoma, they get lymphedema, they get lymphatic cancer. So it's pretty a serious part of the body because that's where we just filter things. They're little bitty pea size nodules throughout the entire body. So sometimes like if you get a sore throat or if you get sick, you'll feel them swell on the inside of your neck below your jawbone. And they'll be like, oh, your lymph nodes are swollen. Well, it's because they're working overtime.
Huh.
So they're trying to get things out. But as a massage therapist, there's specialties that you can go into with massage to do lymphatic drainage and to do lymphatic massage after surgery. Because once you've been cut on, they've cut those lymph nodes, and then we've got to get them working again. So there's all kinds of things with the lymph system that people just don't get. And the whole massage drunk thing, people will have a massage, and they're like, man, I feel high, or I feel drunk, or I feel woozy, or I'm lightheaded. Because your lymph hasn't moved that much probably in a long time because you haven't ran.
Huh.
Same thing, blood flow.
What moves it naturally? Is it like a lymph pump in your body or just motion of your body moves it?
Yes. So your body naturally moves lymph through the body. But when you have dis-ease or you have inflammation or you have an injury or you have sedentary lifestyle, it doesn't move as fast. And so you get these, and flying wasn't even on the list that I was going to talk about, but flying slows our lymph down because you're put under a certain pressure. And so you're sitting for long periods of time, number one, as the, passenger, and then you think of the pilot who's doing it all day, and it is one that definitely needs to be talked about and thought about when it comes to that. So when you're on an airplane, there's little tips and tricks that I try to follow that help my trip go better, that I don't feel swollen or my eyes don't get puffy after, or I don't feel kind of tired and sluggish from flight to flight, just depending on how far you're going and all that. But wearing compression socks.
Yeah, I walk around in airplanes.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't. No, but people don't.
You should. There's always a party in the back, and if not, I'll start one.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what I do.
Yeah.
Well, at least we used to be able to do that. Now it's so restrictive flying. It can't have any fun anymore. But I partied all the way to Australia, years ago on a trip. It was great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everybody was asleep except for us partiers and the flight crew, the flight attendants, and they weren't drinking, of course, but they were certainly enjoying the revelry of us, crazy kids. It was fun.
Right. Yeah. But as you know, if you've been on a plane in the last 2 years, people don't do that. So they don't get up. They are scared to go to the bathroom. They sit there. They don't look at each other. They don't touch each other. And
it's
all
like
the
giant elevator now or what?
Yes, it is. Ugh. It is a very much different world out there. So now the mask mandate's been dropped, and so more people are doing that. But they get in their seat and they stay there, and they dehydrate on purpose. I talk to many people that are traveling, and I'll say, well, be sure you drink your water. And they're like, well, I don't want to have to get up to pee, so I usually don't drink on the plane, or I don't drink on the road trip, or I don't. And I'm like, well, that's backwards. Maybe you should plan your trip to where you have time to stop, and or at the plane, there's a bathroom on the plane. So it's just inconvenient, and people don't understand how deep that goes into their psyche, into their body, into their brain, and how much it takes to recuperate after that. So getting a massage after a trip or before a trip or on a trip is always a plus. It's not just, of course it is luxury and it's nice to do that on vacation, but it is a needed thing to do that pushes the lymph and the blood through the entire body. And so if you're dehydrated, that blood is thicker, the lymph is thicker, and so it sometimes can make you feel kind of like, oh, I felt like crap after that, and it's because you were dehydrated. So massage therapists are always telling you, be sure to drink water. Well, they mean it, and it's for you and them, so that when they're working on you, the fluid in your body is moving more fluid.
Well, you actually have fluid, and that makes more sense. Yeah. So how do you lose fluid on an airplane? I know it's a higher altitude environment. Is it drier? Does it suck the moisture out of you somehow?
Yes. Oh my God. So the cabin, because the pressurization in the cabin, it's pulling the moisture. Like it pulls, like your body, it doesn't even, it's compressed. So it's like, you know, think of what it does to the cabin. So it does that to your body because we have pressure on our body. And then
so there's
it
less pressure,
pushes
though.
The fluid.
There's less pressure in an airplane because they're pressurized to 8,000 feet generally. Cabin altitude
well,
is like 3,000 feet above, you know, Denver.
A Denver. Okay. Well, what I mean is like the sucking out of the air. So like the air is circulated. You're not getting fresh air. The air that's in the airplane is like coming from somewhere. I don't know. Cause I don't, this isn't where I was going. And you told
me
we
can talk about
that
time. We've got a couple of pilots on the line right now.
But,
so, you know,
So the whole thing with travel and airplanes is that the pressurization definitely causes your fluid to move slower. So you're not detoxing at the rate that you normally would if you were down on the ground when you're talking about
that's
a plane.
That's why I say drunk
so our blood
longer, probably.
We have to pee. We have to sweat. You do sweat on a plane because some people get hot. But our body system is not working the same as it would if we were not in an airplane. The science behind all the other stuff, I have no clue. But
it
hydrates the skin. When you get off the plane, you always want to mist your face. Like people are like, man, my face, like they're rubbing their eyes. And again, this depends on how long you're flying and all the things. And if you did drink water, if you drink alcohol. So all of that is moot point because there's no way to know each single person's situation on the plane. But if your feet are down and you don't have compression socks on, you're not pushing that. It's your body is working harder to get that blood from your feet to your head if you're sitting in a chair with your knees at a 90-degree angle. And this goes for a car. This goes for a desk. It goes for anywhere that you're stationary for a long period of time. You're not getting blood flow to the hips and the organs that support it, like in between the hips. You have to think of that. You're just sitting still. The blood only – yeah. So getting up and walking is great, but most people don't do that. Huh. And so if you get a massage or if you even self-massage yourself when you get off the plane, shake your arms and move your arms up and down, kind of like you're pumping blood because you are, and then squatting, lunges, but some people aren't going to do that either. So wearing compression socks pushes the blood flow back up, you know, helps it kind of stay circulating. And then getting some sort of physical manipulation to the body after and during your travel. So, I mean, as a massage therapist, I'll massage myself if I'm sitting somewhere for a long time. Like, I'll just grab my shoulder or roll my neck around or kind of shrug. I do it in a car. I do it when I'm traveling. But with the massage therapy, we're definitely pushing that through your kidneys, through your organs. So if you're not hydrated, you're not going to detox that fluid and you're not going to excrete it. So we want you to drink water. We want you to stay hydrated so that what we're doing continues. That's the benefit of massage therapy.
It's almost like a boost, you know, and this is interesting. That's why they call it massage therapy. I always thought that was one of those little, you know, sort of a euphemism terms like sanitary engineer for a garbage collector, you know, but it really is therapy. And I didn't really think about that until just now. But if you're sitting massaging, so do they do it in a way that moves lymph, you know, is it like a head to toe kind of thing or from middle to out, you know, and do they get this, or they just get the lymph moving and then it naturally, you know, detoxes you because of the fluids it's getting rid of? How does it all work? I'm curious.
All the above. So a regular massage, we're moving lymph no matter what, because that's just what it does when you start pushing on the body. But then there's lymphatic drainage. There's trainings and all of that to do that, to follow the lymph system from one foot to the leg to this, to that, to out. And so it goes back to dry brushing. I think we've talked about that before. We're dry brushing before you get in the shower, gets lymph moving, and then the hot water helps move the lymph around more. So you're dry brushing with like literally a dry brush. It's like a scrub brush that's got bristles on it. That's kind of like a hairbrush. But
this is interesting.
Yeah, it's been a long time, but I remember everything I talk about usually. So it's kind of like in my memory bank. But it's hard to. and we talked about you can get the brush at Everman's. But it's you brush all the way up your arms and all the way up your legs and then out to your lymph system. So dry brushing. consent. It's hard to do that on the radio to visualize it, but people should look it up. And you do.
Oh,
it
I got a great mental picture.
Are
you
seconds.
Kidding? I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. Jackie, do you have a comment on this? This is fascinating, or just massage in general?
No. Once again, I'm flabbergasted.
Okay. You never know what you're going to learn on this show. And this is why we have so many great reporters, that we never know where we're going to go. Okay.
I love it.
Therapist.
So, yes. So massage therapy, that's why it's called that, not masseur, masseuse, not all the things. It was created for therapy. And then like anything else, it can be taken off into the wild blue yonder. But it's to rehabilitate your body. It's to allow it to heal. So when you're on the table, you're not having to do anything. The massage therapist is doing it for you. So they're giving you about 8 hours of work in 1 hour. So a good
wow.
massage, 1 hour massage, lets your body have the amount of repair that a 7 to 8 hour sleep would allow.
Huh.
And that's why people think that it's just, oh, this feels great, I'm going to go back. Well, it's because we're healing your body, and it's not us doing it, but it is, because we're kind of trained to do so, but we're allowing the body to renew, restore, repair by itself on its own. It's telling it, oh, this does work. Yeah, now there's lymph in, like, my kidneys are pumping, my liver's working. And you could, I mean, there are people who get kind of nauseous after or something like that if they've been through a lot, like a whole lot. Like maybe they've been sick for a long time and they're like, I got to have a massage. My body's just killing me. But then they get better faster. So with a massage, if you're sick or if you thought you think you're about to get sick and you get a massage, you get sick, but then you get over it faster because your body excretes it. It's like, oh, here's this virus or here's this little cold or here's this, you know, stomach bug or whatever. Let's pay attention to it and let's get it out. And then the more you get massage, it builds your immune system. So the next time that you get near or close or around being sick, it's the same concept. It's like, oh, I had a sniffle for a little bit and it moved on out. And it's because your body recognizes how to turn on its natural ability to heal. But if you don't give it that boost or you don't give it that experience without having to do something, it's just like with everything else. It's just going to be on autopilot.
Huh.
And you're going to think that you always get sick.
And I thought massage therapy was just in case something was sore, you know, sore back, sore legs, sore something like that. But this is actual therapy. And is there like a, there's a recommended daily allowance of vitamin C. Is there a recommended massage interval or a particular type or a combination of types? I mean, has this been studied to the point where they've actually, stated, once a month, once every 2 months, you know, twice a year, six times a year, what? Is there a recommendation for it? For a massage therapy?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's a million different, and again, it's based off of everybody's thing. So I tell my people 2 to 4 weeks or 4 to 6 weeks, but it's all based on their lifestyle and what they can, of course, afford. But then, like, the best scenario is once a month for me. That's the way I would prefer, 3 to 4 weeks per client.
Okay.
But but you can get one once a week. I have clients who come once a week for 90-minute massages, and it keeps them going. And it's because their bodies, you know, they've been busy, and they've done a lot of things, and they are busy people, and they like to keep their body moving, and they like someone else to do it for them, which is what we're here for. It's kind of like people that go get their hair washed or go get, you know, these – I remember going with my grandmother all the time to the beauty salon. She'd go get her hair done, you know, and they do it so they don't have to wash their hair. It would stay for 3 weeks. She could do it at home, but she chooses not to. So there's things that massage therapy can do for you that you don't have to do yourself. And if people start realizing that it keeps you out of the hospital, keeps you out of the sickness, it keeps you happy, healthy, and whole. There's people who come to me for their marriage. They're like, every time I get a massage, me and my husband, we have like the best dinner. We're so relaxed and we talk and we're open. And I'm like, yeah, because you're not hurting and you just got to lay there for an hour and do nothing. So there's people who do it for their children. They're like, I can go home and play with my kids and I'm not busy. I'm not like scatterbrained. I'm not, oh my gosh, I've got to do this and this, because I've allowed them to just be.
Huh.
And so if you do that on multiple levels, with massage, with meditation, with eating, with all the things, it opens up the fact that you're taking care of yourself. And that's the basis of life. If you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of others.
Well, that's true. I'm wondering if couples have like really great, you know, love lives if they get regular massages. You know, they take the stress away, yes, and then they and get away from the kids for a bit. I'm just curious because I remember there was a company that I worked for called the Learning Adventure and the Learning Annex, and I always had massage for couples. It was a glorified dating service. Yeah. So I'm sure the couple people were there to meet other people and form couples, but that's a different story. But the idea of couples massage, the whole, you know, the whole stress thing, then you go have you know just run away like bunnies, you know, later on. I'm just curious.
No, and that's what they say. I mean, literally, that's life. That's what they tell me. They're like, you've saved my marriage. You've done this because I'll work on the husband and the wife. Or, yes,
wow.
Or the husband has it, or like one of the couple will have its own massage therapist. Like sometimes both of them come to me. Sometimes it's like, oh, well, my husband gets massages, so I started getting massages. And then they're able to talk about their massages, and they're able to talk about, you know, it's just, it brings up a whole new aspect of life. And then when you take care of yourself, it shows. And so when you take the time to spend money and time on yourself, it shows. And people see that in you, and they look at it, they look at you differently. And that's just how it goes. Just like if we see someone who looks like they don't take care of themselves very much. Like there's a middle ground of just,
yeah,
there's this middle ground of like, well, maybe they do something or maybe they don't. But people that like truly, truly take care of themselves and truly, truly don't, you see it. So the more you do for yourself, you're doing it for others in your life. That's why it's okay to be selfish. That's why it's okay to take time for yourself. Because doing that, if you're doing it with the intention of love to do it for yourself, then it just shows in your relationships with everybody. You're a better employee. You're a better brother, sister, mother, all the things. And it's because you took the time to take care of yourself. And all these things, like, I can't do it.
I was going to say, can you get this? Can you get roughly the same benefits or not through just regular exercise? Like I do a lot of bike riding now and in the gym. So like twice a week, I do this 13-mile bike ride, and twice a week at least, hopefully, I'm trying for three times, but twice a week I'm in the gym doing the elliptical, doing the weights. So I'm getting more exercise than I used to get, which is great. In a position where I can do that now. But would I still need a massage on top of that? Would that be just like icing on the cake? Would it be a necessary part of my overall health or kind of optional? What do you think?
Necessary part, because you're working the body when you're working. And so when you're getting a massage, you're getting the work done to you. So you're expelling energy when you're working out, when you're doing all the things, and that boosts completely different hormones, completely different endorphins. And then when you get a massage, the work's been doing to you. So it's repair. It's healing. And if you don't take time to heal after you've worked out and after you've done all this stuff, that's when these people say, well, I quit doing this and my knee hurts. Well, your knee was already injured. It's just you kept going, so you didn't have time for it to start healing. So when it starts healing, it starts bringing attention to itself. And they're like, oh, well, now I can't even run, you know? And it's like, well, no, if you would have been getting work done while you were beating up your knees, then maybe your knees would have lasted longer. And that's just an example, the knee. But neck, shoulder, you know, they're like, I have to work out or my neck and shoulders kill me. And it's like, well, yeah, but eventually when you're 70 or 80 and you may just, I'm done working out. It's not that you can't work out. It's just like, I'm done. I want to not have to work out every day. That's when the injuries set in. That's when you start feeling all this damage you've done that you haven't repaired, you haven't healed. The same thing with chiropractic.
Well,
care.
What part
like
does sleep play in all this?
Oh, beautiful. Sleep plays an amazing role, but a lot of people aren't getting deep sleep. They're not getting into that. They're taking a sleep aid, which just tells your body that it's asleep. That's why some people say they're like, once my sleep aid wears off, I wake up and I've got to stay awake. And it's like, yeah, because you weren't asleep at all. It was just it just told your brain to stop, and it did for a short amount of time. But if your sleep isn't healthy, you're not healing and repairing, you're just surviving. And so massage therapy allows that to happen. It allows you to do the detoxing on the table, massage table, so that you can go home, and when you go to sleep, it's a faster, like, well, I already did this work today on my body. It's been detoxed. It's been moving. I've been, you know, moving all the things out. I could just lay down in my bed and hopefully fall asleep sooner. And you do. Usually, I mean, there's not been many people that haven't said, I slept so good last night after the massage.
Huh. I slept like a rock anyway. Because I totally forget everything. I have this amazing ability to just, like, dump. Every thought in my head just goes whoosh. You know, like a toilet flushing, whoosh, it's gone. And I go to sleep with a clear head, and I don't even remember hitting the pillow half the time. I'm just gone. You know, so
that's great. Yeah,
I look forward to. I look forward to sleep. That's when I look at my own personal Netflix movies.
Oh, those
dreams. Yeah,
the personal
dreams.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. Well, dreams
what'd
are
you
critical.
Say?
You have to sleep enough to. You actually have to sleep enough to dream. That was one of my problems when I was working too much. You know, before that, I wasn't sleeping long enough to dream, and I wasn't getting the deep sleep. I could tell. Now I actually am. But here's a question for you, though, too. Mm-hmm. Someone told me once that sleep is in a 90-minute cycle, and if you can get sleep, you know, 3 hours, like an hour and a half is like 90 minutes. Okay, so that's not enough sleep. 3 hours, that's not enough sleep either. 4.5, yeah, I can do 4.5 and then do the show, but I might take a nap afterwards for, you know, another hour and a half. But it seems to me 6 or 7.5 would be like the ideals if this 90-minute cycle applies. I can do 6 hours and be great. If I do 7.5, that's probably too much sleep for me. So I don't know if ideals change. But have you heard this 90-minute sleep cycle thing?
Yes. And there's also a biohacking thing around the 90 minutes. But the thing is you've got to, your body's got to be in that rhythm of getting in those rhythms for 90 minutes. So that's why they say the 6 to 7, because they're hoping that in that 6 to 7, you have 3 natural cycles of 90 minutes. But there's light in your room that interrupts that. There's noises that we hear that we don't react to, but we hear them because we can still hear when we're asleep. Our conscious can pick that up, but it doesn't necessarily like open our eyes. So if you're not getting into the deep sleep for 90 minutes at a time or whatever, then that's where we say you can hack it. You can, because there's people who can know that when they go to sleep, they're going to go through that cycle because they've tracked their sleep, because you can't hack it unless you track it. So they do the sleep studies and they do the watches and they do all the things and they see their sleep. And there's biohackers who sleep for 3 to 4 hours and they're fine every day. But it's because they've got their bodies, you know, on that rhythm of like, it doesn't matter where I'm at, I'm going to sleep right now. Or I know to not eat 3 hours before I'm going to lay down. I know to drink water as soon as I get up. Like they've taken care of their body so much that their body takes care of them, which is what it's for. You know, that we put this, it's like with blood work. It's like you're in the range and it's this huge, massive range. And, you know, you could be on one end of it. You could be at the very high end of thyroid and they're like, yeah, your thyroid's fine. But it's not fine for us. It's crazy. Okay. So it's the same thing with sleep. It's like, well, I could sleep personally for like 10 hours. But my sleep sometimes isn't healthy because I do go a lot and I'll stay up till 1 or 2 o'clock and then I try to get 6 hours. And so I get that. I get that on a weekend, if I want to sleep, I could sleep for 10 hours because my body's trying to play catch up. But that's also why I get a massage every 2 to 3 weeks. I do breath work and you know, so there's, it just depends on what you're willing to sacrifice or what you're willing to do. But the 90 minutes, that's what.
No, go ahead. Finish.
Yes. I was just saying that's why when people fall asleep on a massage table, it's like that's heaven. So people are like, oh, I'm sorry I fell asleep. I'm like, no, that's what you need. Like your body needs to shut down. So
I imagine most people go to sleep during massages. I'm sure I would. I'd put you asleep in like the first 5 minutes. You know, wake me when we're all set. Yeah, I'm going to be out cold anyway. But here's a question, though. Your whole life is devoted to being healthy, which is fascinating. I don't have that kind of time. Mm-hmm. I need to find some things. Like I want to get my charcoal. I want to do my massage. I want to get a few other things to improve my life. But I can't do what you do. You know, I'd love to. It'd be fascinating. If I could bike ride all the time and I could work out and I could, you know, breathe salt air from the ocean and I could, you know, meditate and do all this kind of, first, there wouldn't be Action Radio if I was doing all those other things. But the point is that there's got to be a certain amount of, you know, selection and compartmentalization. And so I imagine people really have to talk to you, say, you know, what's the most important thing? Given the fact that I may have, you know, 45 minutes a day to do something, I can't make all my smoothies. I can't, you know, I can't meditate. I can't get my massage. I can't do it. I got 45 minutes a day, you know, to do healthy stuff, you know, and if I do an hour and a half workout, that's two days worth of stuff, you know, so how do people start making selections?
Right. If you've got the first thing you need to just do is move, and you can move anywhere and it's free. So in your car, you just got to feel not weird about it. and people feel weird about it. It's like they got to be in a gym or they got to be in front of the TV for them to move. Like something's got to tell them to move.
Oh, I dance in my car all the time. I dance, sing up right out the window. But I'm just, I don't care. At this point in life, you know.
Yeah,
okay.
And that's what needs to happen. So I always tell people, they're like, well, I don't have the time or I don't have the money or I don't have this. I'm like, yeah, you do. You need to rearrange it. So The time that you're sitting there watching Netflix or you're scrolling your phone, like we all do it, but people like to have an excuse. They like to say, oh, well, I can't do that. Yeah, you can. You're just choosing not to. And your brain thinks that you can't because you haven't. So if you start doing it, then you realize, oh, that's not that bad. I just did 10 squats from the bathroom to the bedroom, and that was free. And I got there, you know, a little bit slower, but I did it. Or jumping jacks. Get up out of your bed and do 10 jumping jacks when you wake up in the morning. You know, do 5 squats before you sit down on the toilet. Everybody uses a toilet. Or if you can't squat, do something with your arms or do something with your hands. You will be super surprised if you just move. Like, move around. That's like the number one thing. And then number two is clean water and clean air. So get an air purifier and get a water purifier. If you invest in anything else in your house, stop buying lamps, stop buying cushions, stop buying pillows for like 2 or 3 months, you know, all the things, and invest in a water purifier and an air purifier in your environment. So wherever you're at the most, if you're at work the most, buy a water filter for work that you carry with you. Buy an air purifier for your office. And those are all things that benefit you every single day. You don't have to, you know, there's no maintenance until you need to change the filter.
Huh.
And it's one less thing to think
now
about.
So, Josh, yeah, I'm going to get you in just a second. No, it's okay. You don't have to go yet. No, because I want to see if he has a couple minutes or a question for you. But there's something else that's on offices that we should talk about too, and that is the ions. And this is something that I'm really susceptible to. Back when they had those big old Xerox machines, you don't see them much anymore. But the electric current that was thrown off by those things was so bad and so strong, you know, that I had a massive headache. I'd have to run to the water fountain in the city square, you know, and get my negative ions to counteract all the positive ions coming off the electronic machines. So, and there are machines that actually do that you can buy these things that in the office will disperse the positive ions and replace them with negative ions so that you can have a better electrical balance at work. Is that as big a problem today without those big machines, or what do you think? And then we'll see if Josh has a question.
Yeah, now we're dealing with like the EMFs. It's to that. They're so minute that you don't feel them as strongly. So you felt that from that Xerox machine because it was, of course, you know, a dinosaur, and that's what they knew, but that's all they knew to do back then. Now
the
they have the Bluetooth.
In offices too.
Yeah. And it's the Bluetooth and it's the Wi-Fi and it slowly hits you. And then you're it's fast, but you slowly feel the results of it because you're around it all the time, because you got your phone up to your ear, because you've got a smart TV in your house, because your car's Bluetooth enabled. So you're always in it, so you don't understand what it's doing. And then you start having thyroid problems, then your hair falls out, and then you gain weight, you don't know why. So, yeah, it's a big problem. But that's
we need to talk about that. Yeah. Let me see if Josh has questions. So, Josh, welcome to Action Radio, and I always give a guest a chance to talk to whoever the reporter is right before them. We cross over. I even have reporters talking to other reporters. We always cross over things like that. Just from what you've heard so far, this is Wine, Weed, and Wellness Wednesday with Chancy Terry. Got a question for her at all or a comment? You don't have to. I just, you know, give me
the
option.
I appreciate the pumping up of exercise. I don't think a lot of people get enough, and I think just working in walks and runs daily helps quite a bit, for sure.
Okay.
Yes, and that's why people just walk. Get out of your car and do 5 circles around your car before you go into your house. Go in your house and then walk into every room of your house as soon as you get there. Say you're checking for something. Just move. And if you start watching people, they don't move. And it's sad, but that's free. And so I don't want to hear anybody, you know, when they complain, I'm like, well, I hate it for you, but you're just choosing not to move. Even if you're stuck in a wheelchair, you can move your arms. And if you can't move your arms, you can move your head. And if you're completely paralyzed, you can use your eyes for movement. And you can, like, visualize moving. There's a whole thing on that. So we're visualizing you doing something over and over again is just as effective as you physically are doing it. Sometimes even more because you get to play out every detail. You can work on your imagination to where it's like pinpointed that finger, touch that vase, touch that, and you can, instead of just the autonomic part of our bodies, to just go grab a vase, and we don't think twice, just grab the vase, pick it up. But someone who can't do that, or if you want to play around with it, you just imagine yourself picking up that vase. Then the next time you pick up that vase, you realize how amazing the body is, that you just did that without thinking about it.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. On that note, thank you. This has been another fascinating report. Let's get your contact information and anything you want to, any events.
Yep.
Are you going to be at the event Friday night, our Medical Freedom Rally?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, I'm there. I'm there actually going tonight to stuff bags, and then I'll be there all day Thursday, and then I'll be there all day Friday, and then I'll be at the Blue Wahoo Stadium on Friday night. So we are going to do huge things for medical freedom. Y'all get ready. It's coming. It's coming.
Well, yeah. And I'll be there too. I get 2 minutes. I'll probably take three, and to the chagrin of Dr. Viglione, who's putting this on. But it's going to be fun. It's going to be a great time.
We're going to have
all right.
So I'll see you. Okay, and it's chancyterry.com, chancyterry.com. Just call me or text me or message me.
Or talk to her here.
Y'all have a beautiful morning.
215-383-3333. Thanks, Chancy.
Yes. Thanks. Bye, y'all.
And now, our guest of the day, Joshua Whitehouse. So if ever a name for somebody in politics was created, this is the one, Whitehouse. I know he's been teased about it forever, and we have to find out. But this is someone, a friend of mine now, he's got a really very interesting background, which I really don't know a whole lot about, but I'm going to find out today. And one of the particular things we'll talk about is the Pentagon. So my rather clever title today, The Many Sides of the Pentagon. But he's been a state representative, but I want to find out how you ended up in the Trump administration, how you ended up being a liaison to the Defense Department and the Pentagon. I want to hear your story, because we never had a really chance to talk. We've always been busy on the quick occasions we met at various political things. So tell me, how'd you get your start in politics? Tell me about you. What's going on, Josh?
Sure. So small town, New Hampshire. You get your start in politics up there in a lot of the county committees, same way you do in across the country. And I was very eager at a young age to run for office and decided to do so. So I dropped out of college.
How young were you?
I was 21 at the time.
Okay.
I dropped out of college,
ran for
office.
Yeah, I grew up in Lexington, Massachusetts for high school, and went to UMass Amherst for college. So I know the area of New Hampshire pretty well. So which small town? I'm just curious if you want to tell us.
Farmington. It's about 10 minutes south of Lake Winnipesaukee.
Oh, that's a beautiful area.
Yeah, yeah.
Except in the winter. Yeah, a little cold up there.
Winters are nice. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, winters are nice. It's snowing. I have fun driving in the snow. It usually terrifies y'all from the south, but it's a good time.
Yeah. Well, it's a very interesting state. It's the only state that has a motto, live free or die. That didn't come out by accident. So New Hampshire is a different breed than, say, Vermont, and certainly different than the now Socialist Republic of Massachusetts.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, we're known for our libertarian streak. We have no income tax, no sales tax. A fun fact, the most machine guns per capita of any state in the country.
That raises a fascinating question. And I've still got Bianca in the line. He's one of my regular callers, virtual co-hosts. Bianca, I should start calling you my co-host. But the question is machine guns. Now, as far as I'm concerned, as far as most of us are concerned, that a fully automatic rifle is just as valid under the Second Amendment as a semi-automatic rifle, as a single-shot, bolt action, as a musket. I mean, arms are arms. So has there ever been a move in New Hampshire to change something about, or like do your own Second Amendment where these things are constitutional? Just curious.
Really, we don't really make legislation on gun laws up in New Hampshire to any extent. Constitutional carry was just passed, lifting one of the last restrictions on carrying firearms. So the machine guns are generally regulated at the federal level, not something that we control at the state level.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if, we're always we wander topics here like crazy, but I'm curious what would happen if a state like New Hampshire pushed for changing the federal legislation, saying, look, we want to, your state senators or your senators introduce a bill or your representatives say, look, we're going to change the federal law. This is ridiculous. You know, fully automatic rifles are no different than semi-automatic rifles. People should be able to own them. You know, would that be something that would originate, say, in New Hampshire, for example, you know, considering you do have the most fully automatic rifle owners? I think it'd be an interesting thing to work on.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I don't think that it would make much headway in Congress, but I think that the majority of gun owners in New Hampshire would be supportive.
Yeah, interesting.
Why do states like New Hampshire give the federal government that kind of power?
Good question.
So there was a bill introduced recently, actually. I'm pretty sure it passed that in the House. I think it's going to the Senate, that basically made it illegal for sheriffs or local law enforcement to help the federal government enforce federal law on firearms, which is an interesting take. I don't think many states have done that yet. I don't know if it'll be signed by the governor. He's kind of a lunatic. a lefty, but
that's the way it should be, Joshua, because the states give the federal government the powers that it has, unless it assigns some nefariously. But the powers of the federal government comes from the state, and states should take back the powers that the federal government has.
We have county sheriffs doing a lot of what you're talking about. It wouldn't be at a legislative level, but the county sheriffs here are extremely powerful in various places around the country where they've said, we're not enforcing illegal, unconstitutional, anti-Second Amendment laws. We're just not going to do it. And so even if the federal government does pass them, they're not going to get enforced at the local level. So there's a way that can happen. I don't want to get too far away from our topic, but again, we do digress. And just because we don't get a chance to talk to, you know, you'd be the first person representing New Hampshire on the show. It's good to find out because it's a great state. And they got some decent views, and I wish more states would take them up and resist. We had a big chat on states' resistance yesterday with Joel Rubin, who's running for our state house in Florida. Anyway, if you want to get on to your time as a representative, I'm curious what you learned from that and then how you ended up being a liaison to the Pentagon. How'd that all happen?
So my time as a representative was interesting. We had a kind of a coup where the majority of the caucus had chosen a speaker, and the person who ultimately became speaker was colluding with the Democrats and got a small portion of Republicans. So we ended up with a moderate speaker and a completely split caucus, and that led to little mini caucuses. One was called the Misfits, which I was a part of. Those were the folks. There's about 40 to 50 of us that voted against the budget. And you know, we were known as the troublemakers, and the speaker didn't take too kindly to us. So,
well, you're on the right show.
It was an interesting experience for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Were you always conservative, or did you go through a liberal phase like a lot of folks do in their youth, like I did, and a bunch of other folks did?
I took more of a libertarian path to start, mainly focusing on liberty. Focused legislation, reducing the size of government, reducing any tax, voting against any tax possible, rejecting any increase in spending.
You know,
not necessarily a traditional.
Yeah.
What's that?
Well, I'm just thinking you could help us out a lot because I have a bill that, and you know, basically how we work here, you know, we have writeyourlaws.com. That's WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. And the whole purpose of this show is to take what we talk about on the show and turn it into legislation if necessary. And with taxes, it's very, very necessary to do. But one of our bills takes the standard deduction and says that you cannot withhold money from anybody's paycheck during the time they're earning their standard deduction, because that's money that's going to come back to them anyway. Most people take the standard deduction. And even if they itemize, they can itemize more than that. It's still a good guideline to do. So that as people are earning their $12,000 or whatever it's going to be this year, they get they don't have that money collected from their paycheck initially. So January through, you know, March or April, whatever they take to earn their standard deduction, that money's not touched. You know, that money, they get their full paycheck. Now, once they get that time when that money is going to be taxed, you know, that's when the withholding starts again. So this would be a way to give people their money up front, you know, right away, or by not collecting it in the first place, instead of waiting a year to get it back in a refund. That's one of our bills.
Yeah, no, I love that idea. Basically, when you're paying taxes that are ultimately going to come back to you, you're giving an interest-free loan to the federal government, and that's something you want to avoid.
Yeah.
And that's why
but
folks
it's your money.
Get a large refund. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Folks that get a large refund, that they generally are told that they did their taxes wrong.
Yeah. Well, the large refund is basically your standard deduction. It's money that you paid to the federal government that they took that you're getting back. So why not give it to you this year? So the net change for people really be nothing except they get it this year rather than next year. So instead of getting, you know, in April last year's refund from the money they collected, you would not have money taken this year from January until you earned your standard deduction. Just an idea.
Right.
Okay.
Well, you'll have to work with your representative to Congress, and maybe that's something that can be put into place.
Well, I've worked on that. Actually, we had a huge accomplishment here. We had Mama B on the show. And so Mama B is going to be working with us. She has an amazing amount of contacts. And so with the ideas here at Action Radio, plus the influence and the contacts and the work of Mama B, we're hoping to put together a really interesting coalition of people and guests and candidates for office. And we already have a couple of candidates running for office on Action Radio bills. Jerome Bell up in Virginia. I just met Colonel Calvin. I always get his name wrong. Wimdish, I believe, up in Central Florida is running, and he's going to be including some of our citizen legislation. This is fascinating what's happening here. I mean, it's absolutely wonderful. All right, back to you. Where were we in our story here?
So we got, let's see.
New Hampshire legislator.
So about halfway through being a New Hampshire legislator, I was approached by Corey Lewandowski about Donald Trump running for president. And Corey at the time had just signed on. This was about February of 2015. And he had me meet the what would become the 45th president. And I was the first elected official to endorse him nationwide.
Wow.
47th, yes.
Well, no, actually, he's right now, he's the 45th and the 46th president. He's the first person to actually do that. I'll talk to him when I get him on the show one day. Now, how did you meet Corey Lewandowski? Because it's interesting, because our legal reporter, Jonathan Mosley, went to school with Corey Lewandowski at George Mason University. I've been trying to get Corey on the show. I've written his organization, First American Election Safety Security. I forgot what it's called exactly. My apologies, Corey. But if you're in contact, you know, if it's possible to drop a little line and say, hey, I got this great show I was on, Action Radio, and they write their own legislation, and we'd like your help. You know, I want your help too, George. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think you'd be a fabulous advisor to the show here for some of the things we're working on. But but if you know some folks like that that you want to share with us, please feel free. You know, I'm always up for advancing our cause here. Yeah. So you met, how'd you, because he's from Virginia, isn't he, or where's Corey from? Or is he New Hampshire also?
Corey's originally from Lowell, Massachusetts, but he was in New Hampshire, and he was at the time involved in New Hampshire politics quite heavily. And all politics is local up there. Everything's grassroots. Everyone knows each other if they're involved in politics. And, you know, it's a small state of 1.3 million people. And Corey was kind of a heavy fighter for the liberty cause and reduction of government, reduction of spending, lower taxes. So we ran in the same circles.
Interesting.
And from my time in the legislature, I was known as a troublemaker. I made a little bit of waves, which is
Give me a big wave. What was one of your bigger waves?
Oh, God. Let's.
Isn't this fun? This is why I have guests for an hour, folks, so we can learn all this stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
We'll go through that another time. That's a whole different.
Okay.
That's a whole different tangent.
Well, then you have to come back.
But
back to our story.
That's right. So, yeah, I signed on. I actually joined the campaign as staff too, and in New Hampshire, that ultimately resulted in a resounding victory in the primaries, and I jumped from state to state thereafter. We replicated our efforts and other primary states with very little time, and apparently we were effective. After the primaries, the convention happened, and I switched over to doing advance. I did about, in all said, about 140 rallies in the country.
So what's advanced for those that don't know?
Advanced, it's literally an advanced team. So when the president goes somewhere a few days in advance, the advanced team will go there, find a venue, work with locals, and set up an event so the president can come in with ease and then leave with ease.
Do you work with the Secret Service in terms of security for the president, or is that a totally separate operation?
Yeah, so when we drop, generally the Secret Service does too.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, he was protected by the service. So
okay.
It's local police as well, venue staff, local political staff, local GOP folks. A lot of the elected officials, of course, want to be backstage, get their 5 seconds of fame.
No, their selfie, yeah. See, now, I'd love to have Donald Trump on the show, not because I want the fame or the recognition. Of, well, actually, that would certainly help. But the fact that I think we can genuinely help him here. I think we could genuinely offer legislation that he could put as part of an agenda for running in 2024. And I wish we had more contact with more Republicans. You know, I call them the gelding old party, the GOP, because they're a bunch of wimps. And I think they're going to totally sell out with Kevin McCarthy in the House, which would be Paul Ryan, too, and keeping the turtle, you know, Mitch McConnell in the Senate. And it's going to defeat the purpose of Republicans winning anything. I'm really scared about that, and a lot of people are, too. Also, if I ask anything you can't answer, like security or Secret Service, just tell me. I mean, I don't want to, you know, go into areas where not that we can't, the classified information we can't go into. So don't worry about telling me things you can't tell me. You know, just to say, okay, I did that. But as far as that goes, the idea of the gelding old party. I mean, what do you see happening in the midterms? If we get a Republican victory, are they going to use it?
I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, we have a likely speaker. It's going to be Kevin McCarthy, right? There's no second contender that I can see, right?
Why not?
Scalise has been a name that's been proposed. Look, a lot of these folks, they're entrenched. Once they get elected, they get content. They're not there to serve their district. They're there to maintain and build power for themselves. So McCarthy has earned the favor of a lot of these folks, probably through transactional items, and that's unfortunately how our Congress has worked. And
what's the transactional
why it
item?
Doesn't work.
What is that like? You do for me, I'll do for you. I'll vote for your bill, you vote for mine.
Correct.
Huh.
Correct.
That was a guess, by the way. I had no idea. That's interesting. I'll tell you, honestly, I'm scared to death. Pianki, if you have a comment, feel free to drop in, because it's really nice to have somebody that really knows Washington, really knows politics, and knows the Trump administration. And I'm sure you met the president himself, you know, a few times. Were you that lucky?
Of course, Josh? Of course. Mostly in the campaign early on. And, you know, it was a different world back then. But I worked in Washington for one of his closest aides, John McEntee, and John did a great job with the personnel efforts in the last year of the administration. And, it was a pleasure serving that administration for sure.
Well, obviously you're doing good work, so you wouldn't be able to do some of the things you've done, but this is fascinating. So from a legislator, so you got elected early at a young age, and then you were able to join the campaign. You picked the right one, that's for sure. Good thing you didn't go on the Jeb Bush campaign, because that wasn't going anywhere. But
yeah,
the fact you picked
exclamation point, right?
Well, I have another theory too, and this is one of the theories we talk about on the show, that the Republicans, their job is to lose. And John McCain's job was to lose to Obama. Mitt Romney's job was to completely throw the election to Obama because he could have beaten him. And then the next one was going to be Jeb Bush, who was going to lose to Hillary. And it seems like that's the establishment plan. So do you see, as I see, that there are two Republican parties? There's the grassroots, the real one, the America First that Trump represents, and then there's the establishment that seems at war with us. They seem to have more in common with Democrat establishment, you know, the deep state, as it were. But this is, I see, is the Republicans' biggest problem right now is that you've got two parties. You've got one America First party, and you've got the establishment representing the folks that are entrenched in Washington. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's, of course, a big problem. Look, I think we have a pivotal moment right now where we're deciding the path of our party going forward. And a lot of the folks on our side, right, they're fighting for what it means to be an American, what it means to have a unified nation, right? And you have the other side that is content to go along to get along, right? They just want the status quo, the perpetuation of these institutional ideals, right?
Mm-hmm.
They want to continue funding the military-industrial complex. They want to throw money at the problem because that means somebody gets paid. And I think that our faction of the party, if you will, is going to prevail ultimately. I think it's a when, not if. But, it's going through these changes is ugly. It's never pretty. And what you see today
right.
is kind of
a
result of that.
I think you're right. I just wish we had more assertiveness on the part of folks to make that happen and just, you know, seemingly less opposition. But let's get on to time goes fast on the show. We've got about 35 minutes left where we can chat. Defense, the whole military thing. I want to get into some of the things there. So from the campaign, who was the person you met in contact, and they brought you into the Trump administration, and then you ended up being a liaison with defense. What's that whole story? From campaign.
Sure. So after the campaign, I was on the inaugural committee, the committee that organized the inauguration, which is a massive effort involving pretty much every agency of government. That lasted about a month, and I went into the Department of Agriculture. Now, the personnel efforts at the beginning of the administration were botched. Mm-hmm. They were run by the moderate side of the party, right, who had kind of entrenched themselves. They came right from the RNC. Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
The RNC
okay.
folks. So a lot of us originals were buried under career staff at all the agencies and basically told to shut our mouths and hide. So shortly thereafter, I returned to New Hampshire and worked in the private sector a little bit. And I, about 1.5 years later, I got a call from one John McEntee. I said, John, what do you want, man? And John said, we need you to come help drain the swamp. And obviously, I happily obliged and was down there about 2 weeks after that call. So now the first job I did in the as a liaison was at Homeland Security mm-hmm. under the great Secretary Chad Wolf, or acting secretary, but. Our mission there was to fill vacancies, right? That agency had been neglected in the past by past personnel,
mm-hmm.
and we were there to plug and play folks that were in line with the president's ideology into these jobs and transform the department into a organization that would enact the president's agenda. This is things like building the wall, reducing illegal immigration. Everything you can think of.
Yeah, everything that's not being done now. So this is actually really interesting to me because we've talked about this before on the show too, that President Trump has this incredible opportunity where he was in the White House for 4 years. He's still president as far as I'm concerned. But the fact that he's on this, 4 year break gives him a chance to look at everything that went wrong in the first administration and be able to come back, in 2024 and do it better. Most presidents don't have that option. They go from one term to the second term, and they never get that break to reflect on what happened. So this is a unique thing in history that's happened. It's like the schools. The parents discover what was going on in the schools when they closed the schools for COVID, when they had no reason to do it. Trump has the time to look at this and go, huh. Some of these personnel really screwed up, particularly the Department of Health with Dr. Fascist. That's what we call around here. Anthony Fauci is Dr. Fascist. But the point is that what you did at the Pentagon should have been done all through the government. I mean, I would have fired half the State Department or more. I would have gotten rid of all the health Nazis in the bureaucracy if I'd known what they were going to do with COVID and their suggestions that became mandates. So what you did in defense is really good. But it's like not enough of it was done throughout the Trump's first 4 years, because I've heard from Ratcliffe, John Ratcliffe, was one of the people that was in the White House administration. Some of the other folks that said, we replaced people at the cabinet level, but we didn't go far enough down the chain. And so you still had the Obama appointees and some of the other liberal folks and moderate GOP geldings that were really screwing up the Trump administration because things weren't being administered. They're being talked about at the cabinet level, but they never got to actually being administered. How am I doing?
You're completely correct. And one of the efforts we had at the end of the administration was something called Schedule F. And we had in place an executive order to transfer anybody that writes policy or has effect on policy, they would be classified as Schedule F. That means they were at-will employees, which means a new administration, even the Biden administration, could replace them.
Okay. So how'd this go off? You placed some pretty interesting people. I got an article here from Pentagon purges leading advisors from Defense Policy Board. Henry Kissinger? Madeleine Albright?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, go through the list. Tell me about some of the biggies, and why were they sent packing? I mean, I think it's a good idea, but I'm just curious what you guys are all doing.
Look, I'm not going to name any names specifically, but I will say this. I think that the entire list that you have in front of you, including Henry Kissinger and Madeleine Albright, are people that have botched foreign policy for years and years. They've had us involved in endless wars and that resulted in the millions of deaths across the world. And we were intent on shifting us toward a policy that was less a neoconservative and more America first. And I think that we achieved that goal in a fairly short amount of time.
I think you did too. And I love the fact that some of those folks weren't there. Because what I see when we talk about on the show, and Pianki, feel free to jump in here too if you want, what we call the permanent war class. In other words, we have to be at war somewhere. And the previous war sets up the next war. And I went through this before that World War II ended in 1945. Well, I think that was the year that Korea was split in, or maybe 47, Korea was split into North and South. And then we're at war in 1950. 1953, the Korean War ended. 1954, Vietnam was split, you know, into two countries, North and South. You know, and so we went from Vietnam. Then, of course, then was the whole Middle East, Iraq, Afghanistan. We were in Afghanistan for 20 years. Brandon surrenders our weapons, surrenders everything. We should talk about that, too. And now we have the Ukraine war. You know, Ukraine, to me, is basically the Democrat money laundering operation. That's it, because no matter what you've heard, all the impeachment stuff came from Ukraine. Vindman came from Ukraine. You know, Burisma and Hunter Biden, Ukraine. Ukraine keeps coming up over and over again. And it seems to me that this permanent war class, and you can talk to this, too, they always want us in a war somewhere. It's like perfect 1984. Oceania has to have an enemy. You know, and they're trying to distract from all the horrible things they're doing to this country. We all know they're doing it, but we can't stop it because they're the ones who are still in the White House. But as far as the permanent war class goes, do you know how that got started? I mean, does it go back as far as World War II? And what concrete steps you did? First of all, get rid of the people. But what else were you trying to do to end this neocon permanent war class?
I mean, to address where it came from, I think the tail end of World War II is probably right. I think that it's a cyclical thing, right? These folks make money. The money gives them influence, right? And then they can get more money. It's that simple. It's cyclical. And then folks in the Pentagon, from a personnel standpoint, enable that, right? But here's a question for you. Where does our current Secretary of Defense, where did he last work?
Oh, Lloyd Austin? I don't know. I think I don't know much about these people just because I consider them illegal in the first place. Where did he work? Was he a defense contractor?
No worries. So he was on the board at Raytheon. Loser, Mark Esper, same thing. Mm-hmm. The guy who has to put doctor in front of his name to make himself relevant. look, I think a lot of these people.
Don't sugarcoat it, Josh.
A lot of these
just
people
tell
are,
like it is.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah. No, this is good.
It is what it is. So a lot of these people come from these defense contractors and get their appointments, and they enable their buddies to get contracts, and their friends get paid. So, like I said, very cyclical.
So there's really
that's the way it's been for a long time. A general retire, go to work for a defense contractor, then all of a sudden end up in the Pentagon where he can filter things back to his previous employer. And yes, Ukraine is a money laundering operation, and I see where they're getting ready to kickstart Somalia back over again.
Josh?
I think you're correct. I think the involvement of Somalia was a mistake. I remember when we were withdrawing troops from Somalia towards the tail end. And like I said, this is just a complete split, right? You have the Democrats and the moderate Republicans who are together on this. They want us involved in all these places across the world. And ultimately, our families pay the price in lives and their tax dollars to fund these reckless wars and conflicts.
Is it just money? Is it power? Is it arrogance? Is it, you know, a misplaced nationalism? Is all of the above? You know, what drives these people to go in this complex web of from Congress, you know, from committee staff, you know, to Congress, to the CIA, to the military contractors, you know, or however they go, whatever path these people follow, that we always end up in these ridiculous wars. Someone's going to be making something. Is it just money, or is there a lot more to it than that? What do you think?
I honestly don't know. I try not to impugn motives. I will say this. I think that regardless of motive, it shows that they don't care about us, right?
Okay.
They do not care about the average citizen in the United States. They prefer to wave their flag of morality, to virtue signal about things that are happening in a foreign country rather than deal with the problems that we have in our country, like the 1 million homeless or the people flowing across the border, the drug issues. There's plenty of issues to solve here, but instead we're sending our entire budget over to Ukraine, fighting a war we don't belong in.
Absolutely. So what was President Trump trying to do? How successful was he in changing this? Or were these people so entrenched in so many different places that it was impossible for you to make some real headway?
I mean, look, we had folks that were planning this for a long time. I think at the Pentagon, I think because of a guy named Troop Hemingway and Parker Doyle, and we had a great team of folks that were intent on enacting the agenda, and I think we made great headway. I think that if we get back in, or rather when we get back in, I think we will absolutely be prepared to finish what we started.
Yeah. See, this is the time to plan that. And I hope you don't have to tell me, but I'm hoping you guys are planning exactly what you're going to do. I hope you're making your staff list. I hope you're figuring out which departments go where. I hope which departments you're going to get rid of in terms of large amounts of people, especially. Well, here's something interesting too. We have, I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Peter Pry, former CIA, House Armed Service Committee, brilliant guy. He does our National Security Report, which we've now moved to Tuesdays. Expert in nuclear war, EMP, things like that. And he talks about the incompetence of the State Department. And he talks about these revolving doors. And he talks about the permanent war class, and all these folks that are getting us involved in things we have no business being in, and we're not developing the weapons we should be, like second and third generation nuclear weapons, tactical nuclear weapons, things that we don't have because all we have are these huge, massive thermonuclear city-busting bombs, things like that. So there's a huge – we've got a policy problem too, and we've got a development problem. We've got a lot of problems like that. Are those things that you either did work on or wanted to work on in terms of upgrading us, or is the State Department, peacenik idiots, arms control folks, so entrenched and so taking over government that we can't develop any of the newer weapons that Russia has, for example?
I don't want to speak specifically on capabilities or anything like that. I will say that we are lagging. We are lagging, and it is as much a problem about investment as it is bureaucracy. I think that at the Pentagon specifically, you need 10 layers of approval to move a pen to the other side of the desk. I think that a lot of the red tape needs to be cut, and that's something that can be handled at a personnel level. You just need the right leaders in place to get that kind of stuff done.
Yeah. Well, how much control does the president, any president, have over the military? I mean, Pentagon's huge. It's probably one of the biggest bureaucracies in our government.
Not a lot right now.
Okay.
You have folks like Mark Milley that control a large portion of the military. I mean, that guy wouldn't make it through basic training or a PT test right now, right? Look at him.
Right.
But,
and
this guy's going on TV to virtue signal to make sure he can keep his job in the next administration, right? He was speaking about white guilt. These people have their priorities completely misaligned, right? They just want to stay in power, and that's all they want.
Yeah. Yeah, let me ask you what you want to talk about. That's not what I want to talk about.
About Milley.
Go ahead. Yeah,
let's go back to Milley once. The statement he made about to his Chinese counterpart, under normal circumstances, should I say the right circumstances, wouldn't he not be gone by now?
Yeah, he would be court-martialed. I think that a lot of the actions he took behind President Trump's back were towing the line of treason, right? President Trump was the commander in chief. You don't go behind the back of the commander in chief and disobey orders. But Mark Milley seems to think that his office is equal to that of the President of the United States. And like I said, I think that a lot of these folks have misaligned priorities, and you need the right leadership to come in and realign.
Well, this is a good point, because do they act independently? And this is the first case we heard of when he talked to his counterpart, said he would warn him if Trump decided to attack or do anything, whether or not Trump was trying to do that. But even if Trump weren't planning anything, he may want to say or bluff or do things. He took away every option that Trump had, in a disgusting act of treason. But why would even the next president trust him? Because if he would betray Trump, he would betray any president. And what goes on in these people's minds? Do the military really think that they're not under the civilian control? Do they really believe they do what they want? They just sort of say they're under civilian control, but they really think that they're in charge. What do you think?
I mean, I will say this: the folks down the chain of Mark Milley, right? They follow orders. So it takes one bad egg in that seat or one of the four stars to kind of ruin the whole place. So,
okay. So what do we do about it? Let me open it up to you. And again, this is a chance to say, cause I have always topics I want to talk about, but I want to make sure I get to anything that you wanted to cover today. So what is it about this military? What about this Defense Department, this Pentagon? What do we do with it?
Well, I think that we need to hire folks that, for political appointees that are intent on enacting an agenda and are solely focused on getting things done at the Pentagon. And I spoke about the 10 layers of approvals to get anything done, right? It takes one person intent on getting something done to just fly right through those.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is people are content. They don't push hard enough. So it's just a problem of leadership. It really is. We're failing to produce good leaders right now. And I think that we have a great slate of new leaders in the America First movement that will be able to come in the next administration and get these things done. I think it's as simple as that.
Hmm. Folks, I've had on the show Colonel Doug McGregor. He's been in with Tucker Carlson a bunch of times. Very straightforward, very blunt, very America First, very, I don't want to go in a place I can't win and get out kind of thing. He would be somebody that I think would make sense, or if not him specifically, folks to think like he does in terms of, serving our country, not serving themselves and serving their constituents, or bringing more military bases than the Congress people do. Are you familiar with him at all?
Hi, Doug is a great friend. He was in the Pentagon while I was. He was an advisor to the Secretary of Defense. He's a good friend of the president's. I have an immense amount of respect for him. And he is the exact he's the exact ideology we need at the Pentagon right now, I think.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, like I say, don't give away the story, but I'd love to see him as Secretary of Defense, quite frankly. In fact, we're gonna pick our own ideal cabinet at some point here. So is that being worked on that you can tell us? Is he actually planning for being there and looking at the people seriously and the policies and doing the work now that most presidents don't have a chance to do, or presidential candidates don't have a chance to do beforehand? They're so busy running for office. Is he able to take this time now, this four-year period, really plan out a great administration to do some major changes that we need doing in this country? Like I said, you may not even be able to tell me, but I'm curious. I'm going to ask anyway.
I mean, transitions are always planned. There's no exception to that. Every administration has their transition plan. How well you do that is the question. I think that this time the planning is happening in an earlier stage, and there's no doubt in my mind that we're going to see some changes in that regard towards that America First agenda for sure.
Are you willing to get rid of major portions of our government, particularly things like the State Department, the military leaders that aren't working out, the generals that are against, a policy of America First and really insist on, the permanent war class? How far are you prepared to go?
Well, pretty deep. I think that, and Doug McGregor touts this line quite a bit. There are three times the amount of three stars that there were at the time we were in World War II.
Yeah, I remember saying that.
I think that's ridiculous. Yeah, promotions like that, right? It's all political at this point. So you get above like an 06 in the military, and the promotions are all who you know and who you've kissed up to. I think we need to get rid of that system a bit.
Okay.
Look, there's a lot to do. The State Department, you're completely right. That's another one. We had a great person over there, Abby Jones, and Amanda Milius is over there as well. I think that, look, you need people that are familiar with the battlefield,
mm-hmm.
right, to be able to fight the war. And luckily, we have the experience now to go in and really shake things up.
Okay. Let me open it up to you again, and then I have another question. Anything that we should be covering about the Pentagon or about the military that we haven't talked about that we should?
Not particularly. Well, I think a lot of the contracts that are coming out, keep a good eye on those, right? You can
contract.
See sometimes, you know, $73 million awarded to Raytheon for Javelin missiles that we're sending over to Ukraine. I just think that, if you follow the money, often you'll figure out who's doing what.
Okay. Well, here's a bill that you can share and talk about and take a look at and see what you think. I have a collection of 25 bills to rock 2022. And one of them is, in fact, Fianchi has a bill too. But one of the bills is for a 30-day mandatory comment period for any budget bill or any appropriation over $100 million. Now, that may be too low. I don't know. I just picked that figure. But, you know, Congress can probably, or we can, you know, actually you'd be able to help me pick a good figure. But the point is that once a bill reaches final passage, once they've done their amendments, they've had the conference, they go back and forth, you know, that the bill before final passage gets put on the table for 30 days, we all take a look at it. Now, if it's classified, obviously there's parts of it we can't see. I understand that. But most of the bills aren't. You know, especially stimulus bills, the trillion-dollar, you know, national debt-busting, budget-busting, inflation-creating bills. But if we had a 30-day comment period where not only we could look at it, media could look at it, and most importantly, members of Congress could look at it, could that change the budgeting process?
I mean, I think so, absolutely. I don't think it needs to be that long. I think just 7 days, right? A lot of these bills get written and then put on the floor for a vote like 24 hours before.
Well, see, that's what I'm trying to stop.
I think 7 days would be enough, right? You're not just talking about congressmen, but their staff go through these. And
no, I'm talking about everybody. I'm talking about published in the major media. You know, everybody takes a look at it. Unless, like I say, if it's classified material, that's a different story. But if it's a trillion, the budget itself, you know, should be, once it's been voted on, should be out there. And when the bill is ready for final passage. But I'm thinking particularly things like these stimulus packages, these national debt ending bills, these bills that are passed at the last minute in the wee hours of the morning that nobody has a chance to read, that are 6,000 pages long of BS. Those are the things I'm really targeting. But we should have, and I think if it were open to public comment, if people could actually read them and the members of Congress could read them, I think a lot of these bills would be reduced in spending because people would go, I'm not going to spend money on that. That's crazy. And constituents would say, why are you spending money on this? And you know, media would be going, here's what Congress is spending money on. What do you think? You know, I mean, this could go all the way through our whole system. I like 30 days personally, just because it would give that much more time to do it. You know, I think they can put their way through 7 days, but maybe 30 would be stronger. Think about it.
Yeah, I guess my only question would be, how would all these congressmen get the pork in the legislation if people knew?
Oh,
about
I know.
It?
Yeah, well, that's the whole point. You know exactly where I'm going with this, right? Okay, so here's a question for you, too. One of the worst examples of pork, I think, is the F-35. And I don't know how familiar you are with weapon systems.
Oh,
I'm guessing you are, simply because if you do defense work, you have to know it. We'll get into aircraft carriers next. But the F-35 is the biggest turkey that ever lived. There's a Canadian aviation guy. I've watched various YouTubes, Paul Spray. And he took part in developing the F-16 and the A-10. And his philosophy is very simple, that airplanes need to do one thing and one thing extremely well. The F-16 is a dogfighter carrying two missiles and a cannon, and it's exceptionally good at that. No big massive radar, that's what AWACS are for, or ground radar. No complicated stuff, single pilot, single engine, two, maybe four missiles, and a really good cannon. That's it. It's a dogfighter. That's what it does. Now, ground support, you've got the A-10, perfect airplane, big thick wings, titanium bathtub, 30-millimeter Vulcan cannon with depleted uranium shells, the whole bit. I'm probably exceeding a lot of everybody's technical knowledge here, but it's slow. It can linger for hours. It's as indestructible as any airplane I've ever seen, ever made anywhere, and it's fabulous for ground support. The problem comes in when you try to make the A-10 F-16, you try to make one plane do both. and that doesn't work. Why can't we be simple? And the F-35 seems to be what it's like the old F-111. Do you remember the F-111? The airplane that McNamara said was the one airplane for all the armed forces?
Right.
This is like the F-111 2. This is the F-35 to me is vertical takeoff. It's not vertical takeoff. It's stealthy, but it's not stealthy. You know, it's a dogfighter, but it's not maneuverable. You know, it carries internal weapons in a bay, but not enough to do a really good job. It is the worst example of military contract pork that I think I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, God, I have to tell you, the acquisitions process was a complete mess with that. That is one of the most ridiculous projects ever. The F-35, 49 states had a role in producing the F-35.
Share the wealth.
49 states. That is absolutely insane, right? Mm-hmm. Imagine you build a Nissan. Now, that's a ridiculous example, but imagine you build Nissan and you got 49 states involved in the production of that Nissan. That is absolutely crazy. And that was again, a failure of the acquisitions process at the Pentagon and a failure of leadership.
Mm-hmm. So why do we still have it? Is it that important to spend money on something, or is it too big to fail? You know, this thing can't dogfight. It's not stealthy. It's one thing we learned from Dr. Pry. Low-frequency radar, you know, Battle of Britain, World War II style radar, you know, improved, obviously, but low-frequency, big-wave radar can find stealth airplanes. Up on air traffic control radar, too. You know, stealth is a myth. Not a complete myth, but I mean, it's nowhere near as good as they say. And yet we're spending billions of dollars on it. When does someone say halt? Has anybody said, wait a minute, this is a stupid program? Has anybody done that?
Why would anybody say halt? Everyone's making money off of it, right?
Yeah,
That's the problem.
All right. But people, you know, we've got pilots that have to fight in this airplane. You know, we've got the services. We've got the Army, you've got the Navy and the Air Force are taking this, plus Air Forces around the world, our allies. Are we sharing all our wonderful technology with them?
I don't know. I don't know about the F-35 being shared or anything like that, but I've got to say, I met some folks that flew that plane, and they aren't happy. They aren't happy at all.
Ooh, bring them on the show. Yeah, right, like that's going to happen. You know me. So this is what I find so fascinating. If anybody wants to get you stuff anonymously and safely from a well-placed anonymous source, I'll trust you on it. But those are the things we need to know. The American public needs I've done shows on the F-35 on how bad it is. You know, the next one would be aircraft carriers. You know, just as the battleship was made obsolete by the aircraft carrier, I think the aircraft carrier is now obsolete because of missiles. One missile can take out an aircraft carrier. And you look at an aircraft carrier, it's got to have about 20 ships to support the aircraft carrier, and half the airplanes on board are to defend the aircraft carrier. So how useful are these things? Other than they're big and they take up a lot of space and show up really well on satellite photos now. Why do we have aircraft carriers?
I think that's more a question for Doug McGregor than it would be for me. My efforts at the Pentagon were mostly focused on personnel, but I do think that Doug has spoken quite broadly about this topic and specifically. With the Ukraine war, he's written a couple things about it.
All right. Well, how do we get into Ukraine? What do we do there? if President Trump were in the White House right now, where he should be, sorry, I keep referring to that. We never say Biden administration or President Biden. You can't say that on the show. It's almost like swearing. But anyway, if Trump were there, where would we be in Ukraine?
I mean, if Trump were there instead of this lost old man yelling at a parking lot, I think that it would be as simple as writing an executive order saying all troops that the United States won't dedicate any funding towards Ukraine. We're essentially fighting a proxy war right now, which is ridiculous. It's absolutely
insane. Plus, Vietnam
or well, we have the
Vietnam
problems.
Or again.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Yeah. Would it be possible, has Trump ever thought about a bold step to actually contact Putin or Luchensky or get these guys together? Would he do something like a Reykjavik summit kind of thing with Reagan and Gorbachev? Would he contact, or would that be illegal under what, the Logan Act or something like that, where
it would be illegal, yeah, unfortunately.
Okay. Wouldn't it be great, though? What if you put out? I would just say if Trump and Putin, I don't know. Here's a guy that went and talked to Kim Jong Un, you know, in North Korea. He crossed the North Korean border, walked across, shook hands with Kim Jong Il, and talked. That's unheard of.
Oh, you're talking about a different man. You know, well, President Trump commanded an immense amount of respect from these world leaders. We've completely lost that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, a projection of strength that Donald Trump was amazing at.
Yeah. Why is he so hated, though? You know, considering everything that went right, the economy was good. Jobs were growing, especially for Black and Hispanic folks. The jobs were growing like crazy. You know, countries were being tariffed, so we had a level playing field. You know, our foreign policy was good. We had the Abraham Accords. You know, they've been totally destroyed. All the, we had energy. You know, we had a, you know, all these things were going well. And the governments, they hated Trump so much that, and they cared about their country less. They hate Trump more than they love America. And they're willing to sacrifice us, the whole country, just because of their selfish hatred. And I call it selfish hatred. It is a selfish hatred of Trump. What is wrong with these people? Even the Republicans are doing the same
thing. I think it's a mixture. Oh, yeah, I think it's a mixture of things. But, I mean, you have a media class that's spiraling right now. It's a death spiral. Like, a lot of these organizations, they're losing revenue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not less people are watching TV for multiple reasons. One of them is they can't trust anybody that's speaking on TV.
So listen to us.
And these folks are losing money.
Come to Action Radio.
Yeah.
We'll give it to you straight. We don't pull punches here.
That's right.
This is the ultimate free speech, though.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, another thing.
Go ahead, Bianchi.
I would like the Pentagon to declare that the education that's going on in urban schools is actually a national security issue.
Well, that's interesting.
Because the talent, that possible potential talent that exists there that could help shore up our national security in many different areas is just not being exploited, just not being realized. These kids are just going down the drain.
And honestly, I think that that reminds me. I just read the strategy document the Pentagon put out about the Indo-Pacific front. And one of the areas, the military is West Pacific.
Okay.
One of the key areas that they're focusing on for development of the military is diversity and inclusion, right? I don't know about you, but I don't think that affects readiness whatsoever.
Well, no, and it's so stupid too, because you know what, you know, you can be as diverse as you want, but I want diverse skills. I want people that have diverse knowledge, so that you actually bring in more people with diverse points of view, so that you study all the angles of things.
Right, you want experts.
You know, exactly. Go ahead.
You want a meritocracy.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want. You know, affirmative action is the biggest mistake, I think, in the past couple of decades. I think that we've completely gone over the edge trying to make ourselves look nice instead of prioritizing the merits of an individual. And that's the problem with our society right now.
And the lack of merits affects the performance. You know, it looks good, but it don't. What car looks? A Rambler. It looks good, but it drives like a bunch of bolts.
Well, if you're really going to improve the military, you've got to do a whole ideological purge. You've got to get rid of the non-America firsters. You've got to get rid of the permanent war class. You've got to get rid of the incompetence, the idiots, the people that are there based on their skin color rather than the quality of the work they do and the, you know, and their imagination and skill. You've got to do a wholesale house clean of a lot of the military from probably, you know, colonel and above. Or whatever level you pick, but you're gonna have to pick a level and just really evaluate everybody, and especially maybe not the field commanders, but certainly the leadership, the bureaucratic part of the military. You got a lot of work to do. I wish you luck. I think it's gonna be wonderful.
Yeah,
go ahead.
And like I said, you just need leaders intent on getting that done. That's it.
Mm-hmm. We'll have folks like
that.
And
you know, it's funny you mentioned that.
Go ahead, Bianchi.
It's funny you mentioned that, too, about the merits, because if you got the merits, now, of course, things have changed, but do you realize the number of black scientists that was involved in the Manhattan Project? They didn't get there because of the color of their skin at the time period. They got there because of what they was able to contribute to the project.
Josh?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that when they're more focused on how things are going to look in a photo than how ready our military is to fight a war and one of the many fronts that are developing because of our foreign policy weakness right now. I think that you're in a scary position, right? And I think we're doing a disservice to the American people, right? One of the first objectives of any government is to protect the people from threats. And I think that we're really not focusing on that.
Yeah. I don't think we really have any military bills that would help. I'm trying to think of something from Action Radio. But just pass along that, I hope Donald Trump just does what he needs to do, runs for office again. And, of course, if he's interested, you know, he may want to come on our show, of course. And I'm looking for an endorsement. If he's going to endorse all these Republicans, at least take a look at the only citizen legislature in the world attached to a radio show, and that's us. And we've got 20 seconds left. I'm going to give it all to you, Josh. And thank you so much for coming on the show. You're welcome back anytime. Just drop in. Just call in if you want. You don't even have to,
Greg,
schedule it. Go ahead, sir.
Appreciate you having me on, and keep doing the good work you're doing. Keep up the good fight, all right?
I will. Absolutely. And on that note, we have to go. So thanks to my guest, Joshua.
Thank you.
White House, thanks Bianchi and everybody else, all our regular Wednesday folks now. As we change, we're moving to a 7 o'clock Central Time as opposed to a 6 o'clock. We'll transfer in the next couple of weeks. I'll get that all figured out. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And our website for all our legislation is www.writeyourlaws.com, WRIT-E-Y-O-U-R-L-A-W-S. And I'll see you back tomorrow morning. I think we're still 6 o'clock tomorrow Central Time, but keep watching Facebook and our promos here, and you'll find out what we're doing. Talk to you tomorrow.